It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. It's the morning show crew. We got Clayton Morris from Fox and Friends, Becky Worley from Good Morning America, David Pogue from CBS This Morning, and we'll talk about all the big news, Heartbleed, Cloudflare's nightmare security flaw. We'll talk about what Mark Zuckerberg meant or didn't mean with his Facebook posting, and Uber. Wow, could you have a worse week than Uber had this week? It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Twit This Week in Tech, episode 603, recorded Sunday, February 26th, 2017. Tricks for tips. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Betterment, a smart, easy-to-use, and less expensive way to invest for your financial future. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at betterment.com/twit. And by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you can have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. To get Eero, visit EEERO.com, Best Buy, or Amazon today. And by Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Visit Squarespace.com. Enter the offer code TWIT for a free trial and 10% off. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/twit2. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the latest tech news. We have a fabulous panel joining us today on Oscar night. They're all television celebrities. They're all morning show. Better than that, they're all morning show celebrities. That's Becky Worley from Good Morning America. Hi, Becky.
Good afternoon, Twitters.
It's
I will
beautiful.
Be speaking in my television voice.
It's a beautiful Sunday afternoon. 53 degrees in the city. No, that's radio. Clayton Morris is also here. Fox and Friends. Hello, Clayton.
With the team you can trust. Nice to see you guys.
These are all people who get up at 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. I love, yeah, that's right. It's perfect to do a nighttime show right now. It's perfect.
You don't have to get up tomorrow morning, do you?
Yeah, I've got to do,
we'll get this
I've got to do
quick.
The 5 a.m. show tomorrow morning.
We'll get you out of here quick. Now, David Pogue, he's smart. He tapes all his appearances on CBS This Morning, right?
Yeah, Becky and Clayton. Little tip to the wise.
Don't do it.
Who negotiates your contract?
Becky and David worked together too at Yahoo Tech, right?
We did. Yeah, we did.
We have done videos together.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, great to have you all. You had a good piece this morning on Sunday on the CBS Sunday Morning about recreating actors. You call them digital doubles, and you said I didn't realize this, that more than 100 actors have been scanned for movies, including Angelina Jolie, Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Sigourney Weaver, Dwayne Johnson. Aren't they worried about losing their livelihood?
It's really complicated. One of the reasons they do this is, of course, if the original actor has died. So Rogue One, the Star Wars movie with the dead Peter Cushing resurrected, kind of started all this. And when I saw that movie, I did not realize that he was completely computer generated. I read that later.
So they're not using old clips and kind of jamming them in. They actually created a whole new character based on scans.
This is totally different. They did the same thing with Paul Walker in Furious 7. You may remember he died partway into filming. And they, of course, resurrected the 20-year-old Princess Leia for Rogue One. So you might be interested, and we can make talk about this later, but what started me on this idea for a story for Sunday Morning was not recreating people's faces and bodies digitally, but Adobe's demonstration in November of a new Photoshop for the voice.
Yeah.
This is a program where you can feed it recordings of some famous person, 20 minutes worth, and then type in anything you want, and it will say in that person's perfect voice anything you want. It's like the dawn of audio fake news, and Adobe suddenly like clammed up, like, oh, sorry, we're not talking about this anymore. No, you can't interview us. No, we can't give you a demo.
The timing was a little bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Because a lot of people put it out, well, this would make it trivial to fake anything.
And well, that was the thrust of my story today, is like, yeah, cool that you can resurrect dead actors, but what does evidence mean anymore? Like, if you can make any video of any person doing something that they never did indistinguishably, isn't that the ultimate fake news?
You talked to somebody from USC who is building a human scanning system using $120 cameras and a Home Depot shower curtain. So this could this could be done at home, in other words.
It can indeed. Like that was the point of visiting that guy, is that this isn't a $1 million thing anymore. This is something you can build super cheaply in your own basement and start creating digital doubles in your free time.
This is fascinating to me, because I think, didn't Arnold Schwarzenegger a few years ago, when they did that Terminator
reboot, they euthanized him,
and he thought, I remember him saying he thought this was the future of movies. And for those guys who are being aged out of those action roles, is it possible? I mean, we've seen this in a number of movies, as you pointed out, but even like in the X-Men, that when they looked pretty crappy back then with Patrick Stewart, remember he looked all cherubic a few X-Men films ago. They even tried this with Brandon Lee and the Crow after he was killed on the set, and they tried to digitally morph him into the end scenes of the Crow. I think it's fascinating.
Isn't there an uncanny valley, though? I mean, we're not quite, I don't know. I didn't see the Rogue One. Did they look real? I guess they did. Peter Cushing looked
I don't even know which character that is. That's how deceptive it was.
The guy with the funny hat.
Oh, no, it's Tarkin.
Tarkin. Yeah.
You'd know if you saw him. He's really skeletal with caved in cheeks, and he's British, and you will die, Britishly. And like, he's the number two to Darth Vader.
Grand Admiral Tarquin. Yeah. He says the Battlestar is nearly operational, Lord Vader. That guy.
Yeah. The really Skeletor guy. But now I know what you're talking about.
To answer your question, Leo, so Uncanny Valley is this place where completely computer-generated humans has been stuck for the last 15 years, where there's something a little off. Like, theoretically, they should look normal, but they look a little off. And the argument of this story now is that we have finally exited Uncanny Valley. They can now make characters on screen that are completely computer generated, that are so real you literally cannot tell the difference.
Action movies are such a big thing right now, especially because they really market well globally. And in action movies, you don't actually have to know how to act. So I think it doesn't really matter with those in a way.
Well, I wonder what this does to the stunt double too. You know, like would this make more stunt doubles, fewer actors? They'd have them in more scenes, and they need them, and they just would digitally put their faces on there.
Well, I hope for a day when I can retire, but there'll be enough footage of me that they
keep the show going.
The show goes on with or without me.
Like Chuck E. Cheese. So you could be like, you come out every hour, and they just would have enough. There's enough audio recordings of you that they could probably do something.
Right. Every hour. Hello, boys and girls. Welcome to Twit. So this is Tarkin from Rogue One.
Happen.
And notice he's kind of dimly lit. If you stall it, it looks, his hair even looks a little plastic. There is Uncanny Valley here. But the thing is, it's a short scene that moves very quickly. So,
I don't know. You know, my story from CBS Sunday Morning this morning is online. Just, you can Google it. CBS Sunday Morning, Pogue digital doubles. And they chose for that some really dead on, close up, well lit dialogue scenes of Tarkin. And when I saw the movie, I didn't know.
Yeah.
So it's really good.
And inevitably, they'll get better and better and better at this. But
do you guys see in one of those recent Avengers movies, they euthanized Robert Downey Jr. They made him like 25 or 20 as a rebellious teen or something.
And well, I was going to bring that up.
It was amazing.
The way, It was amazing, but I feel like I was going to ask you about that, if that was in your piece or not, because that scene to me, it was kind of like – it was like they were not making it as real as they could have on purpose.
Oh, interesting.
That's the way I took it. Or, you know, when I was looking at it, I instantly knew it was digital. We know that he's not that young, so clearly – there's not going to be footage of him at that young and they're going to be able to use it. So maybe it's that not being able to suspend disbelief. It's being pulled out of you because you know that he's the age he is. But
here's the
CBS.
That does look pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. That does look pretty good. But
do you guys watch This Is Us? I spent so much of that show trying to figure out how Mandy Moore goes like 40 years between being a 20 something and a 65 year old something. So even though there's no CGI on that, I feel like I spend a ton of time disbelieving.
Makeup. It's amazing. you should see the portrait of me in my basement. I think as my understanding, unless the technology is advanced, that they also sometimes use real actors and then modify them slightly. This one is
that's what you're seeing here. So they got another actor on the left. That's right. Guy Williams, who looks a little bit like Tarkin, to wear the motion tracking dots on his face. And he performed all the lines. Ah. So that's how they got his mouth to move and they got the accent right. He sounds a lot like Peter Cushing. And then they overlaid Cushing's face on that performance. Wow.
Before she died, Princess Leia said, I shouldn't call her Princess Leia, that's kind of mean, said that she will not be in future Star Wars movies, that she knows for a fact they're not going to do that to her, right? There was some debate over that.
It's interesting because actors increasingly are now putting it in their wills.
Right.
What's allowed to be done with them. I think Robin Williams, for example, said for something like 25 years.
You can't use my image.
You can't use me. Yeah. No way.
But
no
remember
how.
Fred Astaire dancing with a vacuum clip in an ad?
Swiffer?
With a Swiffer?
Right, I mean, whatever that was.
Yeah, it was something like that. I mean, they've been doing this for a while, and you figure 25 years from now, Robin Williams will resurface, and it'll be in ads and stuff. And man, I wouldn't want that, which is, again, leads me to that question I asked you at the very beginning. Why would these actors allow themselves to be?
So the Fred Astaire one, I'm glad you brought that up. First of all, that's a different matter. They're taking existing footage.
Right.
There's nothing new created. But the reason I think that one is so significant is because his widow gave permission.
Right. The estate
but
sold.
His children said no way.
Oh, interesting.
So obviously the rule now is get the estate's permission, right? We could all agree. We'd all be happy with that. But what if some agree and some don't? That's where it gets tricky.
Or what if things change where the language is even written into the contracts, like this new technology doesn't even exist? I mean, like Johnny Cash's estate, I think, weren't they upset that they used a ring of fire for a hemorrhoids commercial?
Well, if the shoe fits.
I'm just saying.
Really Michael Jackson, the O performance in Las Vegas.
He appears on stage. I saw that. Not O. There's a Michael Jackson show.
Yeah, but
show.
It's Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, Cirque du Soleil, yeah.
And so to answer your question, why?
Yeah, one. That's it. Yeah.
One. That's it. Thank you. Why these performers would want to do it is because there is a form of artistry in that. I mean, when the hologram appeared on stage, I will completely admit it. I cried. Surprising and emotional. And, you know, growing up in the Michael Jackson era, it was sort of it shocked me a little bit.
Back.
So I could see how an artist would want to try and expand the boundaries even after death.
My memory of it, though, is it looks almost like a Pepper's Ghost kind of illusion. It intentionally doesn't. It's a little ghostly, right? It's not.
Yeah, it's not trying to be perfectly human and exactly matching flesh.
Otherwise, you'd go, what the hell? What's he doing there?
Yeah.
Right.
And it didn't. You got used to it really fast, too. Yeah. It was the initial surprise.
Yeah.
And then once it was there for a couple minutes, it's like all technology, you assimilate it into your thinking so quickly.
The larger question, though, which you raised at the very beginning, David, is, well, what does this do to facts? What does this do to you? We used to say photos or it didn't happen. Well, that clearly is no longer proof of anything. You can make anything up. Then
you need
what?
A body. You need a body.
Yeah.
Like Bigfoot.
Body or it didn't happen.
Yeah, right. I interviewed three people for this, and they all had three different answers. So The first guy who does this all the time said, well, look, nowadays you pretty much know if a photo is real, right? Like either you go, oh, that's fake, or oh, that might have been faked, or yeah, that's plausible. I mean, we've learned to have a filter. And he said the same will be true of videos, that this won't be a problem because we'll kind of know. The second guy said, oh, yeah, we're in deep doo-doo. This is going to be a disaster. We're just going to all have to become more skeptical consumers. And the third guy said, we need to start coming up with rules. We need to make some laws. We need to convene a body on the ethics of creating scenes that never existed.
Yeah, fascinating. And nevertheless, you can have all the rules in the world, but it doesn't really – it's not going to prevent somebody from doing it if they're malicious, right?
Right, but if there's a penalty for doing so, that might be a start.
Yeah, they may never even be detected.
Right.
What a world we live in. Technology, it's clearly outpaced our ability to adjust. And I mean, and forget Congress, forget the courts, forget laws. They're way behind. We can't even adjust to it in real time.
Well, who would have thought even like Amazon tonight at the Oscars is going to have a movie in the Academy Awards? Manchester by the Sea is an Amazon Studios. I mean, if you would have tried to predict that a few years ago.
Well, we interviewed one of the nominees for animated short. It's a Pearl. And it was a Google Spotlight story. Remember the Google Spotlight? You can actually still get it. It's a 360-degree movie that about a girl. It's 5 minutes long in a car, and you can watch her grow up, basically. And because it's 360, I mean, this is a whole new medium for filmmakers, right? And this is nominated for an Oscar, the first 360-degree virtual reality film nominated for an Oscar. Clearly, we're entering that new world.
That's amazing.
I'm not convinced. I
did ask the director. I said, you know, can you really? If you watch this, have you seen Pearl, David? Because if you watch it, it really does tell a story, but it's very limited, right? Because you know you can't control the point of view as a
right. Now stop right now. Stop right. Are you moving that?
Yeah,
stop,
I am.
Stop your cursor right now.
Yeah.
So the problem with VR movies,
you're looking
is
out
that
the wrong window.
We're looking out the wrong window. The purpose of a director is not just to direct the actors, right. It's to direct your attention.
Right.
And I could sit here for 5 minutes and miss it.
That was the stupidest movie ever. It was just a bunch of driving. That's my point, though.
What's the value of 360 if you're supposed to look in one direction the whole time?
Yeah.
360 is amazing for GoPro surfing videos.
Yeah.
Not for narrative fictional accounts, in my opinion.
Well, watch, because if he wins an Oscar, that's going to change a lot of things.
Well, I mean, there's innovation, and then there's, you know, something that's really going to be a trajectory, and I think those aren't necessarily the same thing.
Let's take a break. None of you are in Barcelona. Don't you like jamón ibérico?
I like the cold wine.
Go for the ham, salty, stay for the sangria.
Salty sardines. Oh, delicious.
But there are lots of people in Barcelona this weekend getting ready for Mobile World Congress, which starts tomorrow. We had a number of press conferences already, a lot of new phone announcements. We'll talk about some of those, including Samsung's announcement, which started 25 minutes late. And as a result, I had to cut it off so I could go do the Tech Guy show. It's good. They didn't announce anything important. You didn't miss a thing. Our show today brought to you by Betterment. This is, I tell you what, taking the world by storm. Everybody, you need to invest. You need to save, right, for your future. And a lot of people try to do it themselves. But there's a better way. Betterment customers can expect 4.3% higher returns than a typical do-it-yourself investor. Why? Because Betterment is automated. It automatically diversifies, rebalances. Fees are lower. The computer does things like tax loss harvesting. It'd be hard for you to do. But they do automatically, which lowers your investment taxes, increases your after-tax returns. And it's a total end-to-end solution, so faster cash transfers, tax forms available at the earliest possible date. If, you know, many of us have old traditional advisors, and I'll tell you what, you're lucky if you get your forms, your 1099 investment forms in March or April. Investing is completely secure. Betterment is the largest independent automated investing service with more than $5.5 billion under investment, 180,000 customers. Their portfolio is designed to achieve optimal results no matter what kind of investor you are. No minimums to sign up either. I love that. So you can go, you can give it a try, you can understand it. Save up to 6 times on fees, no trade fees, no transaction fees, no rebalancing fees. And you can even use the investment dashboard at Betterment to keep track of your other investments. You can sync them all so you can see your total net worth in one place. Betterment provides investing advice through smart technology and real people to help with account support 24/7. Investing does involve risk, but I'll tell you what, right now get a month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at betterment.com/twit. That's betterment.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. David Pogue, Becky Worley, Clayton Morris. I feel like it's the morning show team. This is good. I like doing this.
We're missing NBC, I think.
Ah, screw them. We probably know whoever's over there. We probably know them, right? They're, everybody seems to like, I go over to Headline News now and I see Michaela. And then Erica Hill right after Michaela Pereira. It's wild. All the tech TV people. I'm glad they've succeeded.
The diaspora.
Where I failed. let's see. Uber. I guess we should talk about Uber. This was a bad week for Uber.
Bad week for Uber.
I'm really torn. I like using Uber. But increasingly, I'm starting to feel like this is not a great company. Most recently, one of Uber's employers, a programmer, Susan Fowler, wrote a blog post indicting Uber. She worked there for a year and has since left for its treatment. And one of the, I love Kara Swisher's article about it, in which Kara points out, she says it's all about the leather jacket. Becky, so should I tell that story? And then I'll let, Becky, I'd like to hear a woman respond.
Me?
Yeah, ooh, respond. Yeah, you're our token woman, so.
Team me up, Leo, team me up.
Recode Kara Swisher, for the want of a leather jacket is Uber lost. She tells, among all the, you know, really just horrific HR stories, I mean, she was harassed in all sorts of ways. HR never responded. But the one that Kara says was most telling, and that she says everybody, every woman in Silicon Valley will kind of understand, Uber ordered leather jackets, but only for the men, because
they got a bulk discount.
They got a discount. There were only 6 women left, and they said, well, it would be discrimination to buy you jackets because we get a better discount on the 120 jackets we're buying for the 120 men. It would cost us more to buy you jackets, so we're just not going to get you jackets at all. Susan writes, we were told if we wanted leather jackets, we women needed to find jackets that were the same price as the bulk order price of the men's jackets. Now, who cares about jackets? But it is kind of, it tells you something about the culture, right? And this was a director that told her that.
That is the overarching kind of, it gives you an indication of the institutionalized perception of women at the company. But I mean, just to peel it back and go back to this story that Susan Fowler told about her manager, that's the one that really blew me out of the water.
Yeah. This was right when she started. She started as a developer in the reliability department, SRE, they call it.
I'm just going to read from this blog that she wrote because I think it's really important. On my first official day rotating on the team, my new manager sent me a string of messages over company chat. He was in an open relationship, he said, and his girlfriend was having an easy time finding new partners, but he wasn't. He was trying to stay out of trouble at work, he said, but he couldn't help getting into trouble. It was clear that he was trying to get me to have sex with him, and it was so clearly out of line, I took screenshots and reported him to HR. HR did nothing in this, and now I'm paraphrasing, did nothing. They told the woman that he is a very high performer and that...
And it's the first time.
It's the first time.
It's the first time. This has never happened before.
Right. Yeah. What a lie.
Except it had.
Because over and over. With other employees. Ugh. I mean, this is...
You can't trust the HR department. You know, you're supposed to be able to go to the HR department because... And, you know, not facing any retaliation from anybody in the company. If you don't feel safe being able to go to the HR department, you're in trouble. And there was a company culture, this toxicity, even within the HR department, which was knew that this was not the first time that this guy had done this, and it was also lying to her and other women inside the company.
Now, Uber did immediately respond. Travis Kalanick, the CEO and founder of Uber, hired Eric Holder, former attorney general, to lead an independent investigation. And said, we certainly, this, I didn't know about this and I would never condone this, and we're going to get to the bottom of this and we're going to root this kind of institutional sexism out.
I don't know. I mean, Lance Ulanoff wrote a great article about this, basically saying that, you know, this is just a reaction to the press, and that, you know, they also pulled out Arianna Huffington, who's on their board, and says she'll be on it. And she said that the company would no longer be hiring, quote, brilliant jerks. But where has she been the last 12 months? I mean, this is obviously an institutionalized problem. And I was, okay, so let's just say that they have finally gotten the message that this is not a good culture for women. I think they stated that they had 15% of their engineers were women, and that it's, you know, they're trying hard to create a more woman-friendly environment.
Fowler in her post said, by the time I left a year later, most of the women had left. There were only three or four women engineers left.
So the big questions are, do they get it? And then how do they reboot their corporate culture? I was trying to think of companies
Clean
that
house.
Have been involved. I don't know.
That's
what's
going to happen here, because once they start peeling this onion back, and, you know, especially when you have the former attorney general in there, he's not going to let anything just go. They're going to start to peel this onion back. What they're going to do is they're going to have this, it's an independent investigation. They're not bound by Uber in any way. They're going to be bringing people in, former employees and current employees, and they're going to tell them, look, you have full and unfettered ability to tell the truth in this room. What you say with us is in this room, and you're going to let us know, did this ever happen? They're going to ask them a series of questions. They're going to go down the line, and they're going to start to find stuff. They're going to start to peel this onion back, and the assessment that they come up with is going to be damning. I mean, it's going to be either, you know, you've got a clean house, you've got a laundry list of people who are covering up for these individuals, and there's going to either have to be a clean house. I mean, I've already enjoyed deleting Uber off my phone.
Yeah, that's my question. There was a delete Uber movement earlier when Uber, after the taxi strike at JFK, Uber sent out an announcement saying, we eliminated surge pricing, take an Uber. And everybody said, wait a minute. And then the hashtag delete Uber. I don't think that was fair. I don't know if that really was a good reason to delete Uber. It could very well have been an automated. And then they were trying to be responsive, saying, well, you know, we've had problems with surge pricing before, people seeing that as predatory, so we're not going to do it. And it backfired on them. But
I have to say that I think the outcome that Clayton described might be one possible outcome, but I think a more likely outcome will be, as the blog post by Uber Investors pointed out, Eric Holder is not independent. Eric Holder is on their payroll. His firm is being paid to do this investigation. He has been involved on previous Uber investigations, you may recall, and nothing has changed. This is not the first really nasty smell we've had coming from Uber. I mean, they've been in one mess after another.
Feels like a continuous drumbeat of this.
Newest story is the self-driving car lie that they were just caught in.
Okay, so that was an interesting one. In San Francisco, there's video of out in front of the Museum of Modern Art, a very crowded area down by Moscone Center. A lot of people are familiar with it. A guy's watching as an Uber whizzes through a red light and just misses a pedestrian. And Uber, when confronted with that, said, oh, no, you know what? That the human had taken over. That was a human error, which, not that that makes me feel any better. And now it turns out that was a lie, Clayton?
Yeah. And you remember their PR statement that they had released back in December, and it was widely reported, and people were like chunking it out, saying that this sounds like that they're wording this to mislead at the time, that it sounds like there was a human driving the car. But if you started to look closely, as they described, if you parsed it closely, it could be the case that the car was in this like autonomous mode. It turns out it was a total lie. I mean,
how do we find that out? There it is. There's the video.
New York Times.
Interesting.
Do you think that morning TV would accept the word douchey?
I don't know about morning TV, but I'll take it.
That's the perfect word to describe. You know, it really is. Like,
Yeah, but okay. And some of this is because Uber had to be a combative company to disrupt the highly entrenched taxi companies in city after city. They faced lawsuits, fights, boycotts, all sorts of... I mean, this was not an easy thing to do. And in the face of it, they really created a billion-dollar company very quickly. So maybe this just combative nature of Kalanick and Uber in general is just, you know... They're just an aggressive company.
Well, I'm surprised none of us.
Like,
and, I was just going to say. I mean, I'm surprised Lyft hasn't come up in this conversation yet. There is an
there's
alternative.
There are many alternatives.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Without a bunch of douches at the helm.
Well, there've been.
Well, I downloaded their app. You know, when I deleted Uber off my phone.
Becky, what were you going to say?
I just think that a lot of companies that have strong founders go through painful adolescence periods where they're used to being able to turn the zodiac at a moment's notice on a whim and act as individuals and have their personality pervade the entire company. But once you start driving a Titanic, it doesn't work like that anymore because you lose something in translation. And this is a company that's going through a painful adolescence. They have whole specialists that come in and help founders transition from that zodiac mentality to driving the Titanic. And the first thing that has to happen in order for that to occur is the founder has to, you know, go through the AA process, is recognizing a problem and recognizing that they are the problem.
I love this. I was looking up Travis Kalanick quotes. I got a website, AZ Quotes, where there's a bunch of quotes. And then at the end of the quotes, they offer since you're reading Travis's quotes, you might like quotes from Elizabeth Holmes, Evan Spiegel, Jack Dorsey, and Michael Arrington. I guess the algorithm kind of understands
what douchery is.
Now, Nick Woodman, he's GoPro at Brian Chesky from Airbnb. So there is a certain bro spirit in a lot of our startups. Is it concomitant with a startup that you have to have a certain attitude?
Cavalier.
Maybe you don't have time for. By the way, you're gonna shout at me if I say this, Becky. You don't have time for political correctness.
I'm actually more interested in this. I actually can't speak for this because I've never worked at a company that has had a toxic culture towards women. Right. I work in a company that has a very matriarchal kind of affect to it. I mean, you don't mess with Diane Sawyer and Martha Raddatz.
Yeah.
And so I have had quite the opposite experience.
Yeah. That's at ABC.
My bigger question is, I don't know if corporations have the ability to recover from scandal like this. Name me one company that's had a scandal that has totally fixed their corporate culture. I asked on Twitter. I mean, people said Tyco. I don't even know what
Tyco had a big problem. I do remember that.
Volkswagen from the
Volkswagen,
back in
maybe Samsung,
40s, but now it's come back full circle.
Also about the diesel fakery that Volkswagen did last year or the year before.
Yeah, I mean the Catholic Church.
well, we don't know if they've come back or not yet.
But that's the thing is like I can't name there's no one glowing example of this company had this terrible problem and they just completely fixed it and came back.
Actually,
Uber had that town meeting audio that was leaked last week.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
So Travis met with 100 women from the company and listened to their grievances. And he said, okay, sorry, things will change. I'm really sorry. You're right. This is bad. We'll fix this. But as they said in this leaked audio, but Travis, this is what you say every time and nothing changes.
I think about Facebook, which for years had kind of a policy, forge ahead and apologize later. But I think it wasn't a sexist issue. It was issues of, you know, privacy, you know, violating user privacy and then saying, oh, whoops, sorry, and backing off on that. It does seem like that's kind of the philosophy of many startups. We don't have time for niceties. We're going to just forge forward. I'm looking at Samsung. You talk about reputation. Samsung was third in brand reputation in 2015, seventh in 2016, this year after the Galaxy Note 7 recall, 49th.
So it
does hurt you. It can really hurt you.
Well, let's talk about market forces. So you've got the marketing problem. Then you've got just the talent problem. Talent's a really big issue in San Francisco. So if you can't get 50%, maybe not 50% of the engineers or coders or what have you, but if you just pretty much make yourself unattractive to a large swath of the talent, then there's a market force that's going to have an effect.
So what happens to Uber? I mean, they're well capitalized. They're losing money very fast, but that doesn't seem to hurt anybody in today's tech world.
I don't see this as a huge impact on their business, their trajectory, or their bottom line. I think that there are many other market forces that will affect them in a larger way than this. I think that people will have a perception of them as being douchey, but when you're drunk and it's 1 a.m., you're going to call an Uber.
That's the bottom line. When it's
that should be their new slogan.
Yeah,
I used Lyft last week. I was in Nashville, flew back, used Lyft at the airport. It worked flawlessly. So I didn't skip a beat and deleted Uber and never looked back.
But I mean, Lyft is. I mean, it's David and Goliath. I mean, Lyft is this, and Uber is. Yeah. I mean, they're a tiny percentage.
Chris Saad, who is head of product at Uber and the developer platform, tweeted. And I have a lot of respect for Chris. Chris has been around for a long time. He said people don't understand. Uber is a great company. We're going to fix this. We want to fix this. He was really defending his company, and saying that Fowler really was not, had kind of overstepped. That was an issue. With this is often what happens. By the way, it happened with Ellen Pao when she sued. Who did she sue?
Reddit.
No, she was the CEO of Reddit. Before she sued Reddit.
Kleiner.
She was Kleiner Perkins.
Oh, right.
She
right.
sued and lost after a very vicious trial. And I think this is one of the reasons women don't come forward. I kind of admire Susan Fowler for writing this piece, because often they get tarred with that brush. Company goes on fine. And
she did such a nice job of not being hyperbolic in her description. She was so understated in both everything from the title to the description of what happened, and it was so egregious that anyone who tries to push back on her, I think, is really reaching, because it was just very factual and clear and not trying to make an outrageous case.
Yeah.
You mean Susan Fowler?
Susan Fowler. Yeah, she really did it
Susan
well.
Fowler.
Yeah. But didn't sue.
But Susan Fowler's thing is only, the top of it. Then the New York Times did that big expose after interviewing 30 people of, the culture and the way it is in there.
Amazon. Remember the piece they did on the Amazon
piece? Cry at their desks.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the questions I'm asking are, A, is this kind of business as usual in startups? They're really inhumane. They really drive people hard, and they often do things, that we would deem as reprehensible in more established businesses like ABC. And two, how does this hurt? Does this hurt the company? There certainly is a delete Uber movement. Clayton did it. He's taking Lyft from now on. As Becky says, is this just bad publicity? But Uber will, because when you're drunk at 1 a.m., who else are you going to call?
That's the tagline.
Google will survive. Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is, you got to remember that all these things we're talking about, like kindness and equality and fairness of rights, regardless of gender or sexual belief or whatever, unfortunately, these are like East Coast, West Coast liberal city feelings, as we now know from the election. Like a vast swath of the country doesn't care about treating people fairly and grabbing people by the,
No, I think there's a significant number of people who just say, oh, that's Susan Fowler, and I'm going to still use Uber.
Right.
Yeah. And we were talking about Hidden Figures. And, it wasn't so long ago where you see these three black women at NASA and the discrimination that they faced, the nastiness they faced. That wasn't that long ago. And it was just accepted. You see all these smart engineers, male engineers with their little skinny ties and their short sleeve white shirts saying, I'm not going to drink that coffee. She just drank out of that. She's got to have a colored only coffee pot. It's just tragic. And yet that's so recent in our memory.
Well, Well, yeah, I think to David's point is
Mad Men.
We have a space in our collective acceptability spectrum for a lot of these behaviors. But if you look at the trajectory of where we're going, it does point to this being unacceptable. And ultimately, I hope market forces will drive it out of the business world, because it just doesn't make sense in the long run. It's not good for anybody.
Well, and that's the question. Is it or is it not? I mean, Uber's done very well. NASA did okay. They got a man in space. Maybe it doesn't hurt the company. Or can you make the argument, and I think you can, that diversity makes a better product? And I'm going to switch focus here to Snapchat, which is probably going to do its IPO this week. And they got a lot of pain because they did blackface filters, right? And then they did an Asian filter that were wholly racist. And the point was made, if you have a bunch of white bro programmers writing these filters, it's not that they're racist necessarily. They're just not going to be sensitive to what blackface means. It hurts the company in the long run, right? It hurts the product.
If you have a global multicultural consumer base, then you probably need to have someone who understands all of the people in that consumer base.
Yeah. Well, that's the question. Is it going to hurt the company or what? You know, I don't know.
I think they're going to call me for that tagline. We're douchey, but you're drunk, and it's 1 a.m., so suck it.
Yeah.
You're useless. Drunk,
we're here. Just don't barf in the back.
I took an Uber just the other day, and the driver told me the most unbelievable story. I know this isn't like typical Twit stuff, but you'll enjoy this. So you know what the Uber pool thing is, where you share an itinerary with total strangers. So the driver's driving along, and he picks up the first passenger, a businessman, sits in the passenger seat, gets busy on his phone. And then the driver picks up a young couple at a later stop. They're all going down the same highway, so they're sharing a car for less money. The young couple gets into the back, and they're making out, hot and heavy, attractive young man and woman. And there's no conversation. They're just driving along. And after a while, the girl in the back seat giggles at the touch of her boyfriend, and the passenger, the businessman in the front seat, turns around and goes, "Megan?"
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. Oh, no.
Yep. So he didn't know that his girlfriend was cheating on him, and the guy she was cheating on him with didn't know that she had another boyfriend.
And he's in the front seat.
See, I love it's even affecting Uber's rides.
Well, it'd be interesting to watch how this affects Uber. I think I agree with you, Becky. It's not going to affect their business one whit, and they'll just go on. And it wouldn't be just if it were just this incident, maybe. But it's just this continuous day after day story about Uber. There's another one. Google's suing Uber. Actually, they're suing a company Uber acquired called Otto. That's the self-driving trucks. Apparently, a guy who was working for Google's Waymo, their autonomous vehicle division, Anthony Lewandowski, downloaded 14,000 technical files from the Google servers and then launched the autonomous truck startup Otto, which was acquired a few months later by Uber. And, of course, Lewandowski is now running the automated car division at Uber. And so Google is now suing Uber, saying, they said, "We don't want to do this. We don't like to do this. But, boy, when somebody steals your stuff, then you got to get upset." According to Wired, it's actually it's the lasers. the lasers that they're using that make the LiDAR maps are the technology that was borrowed from Waymo.
Well, in reading a little bit about this story, one of the things that I found really interesting is that I had presumed incorrectly that Google was going to be licensing their self-driving technology to other manufacturers of cars who were already in the business. But I think it was at the Detroit Auto Show, one of the auto shows early this year, the CEO of Waymo, this Google self-driving car component within Alphabet.
Both Auto and Waymo have the best names. I just love
them. Oh, right. So good. They tell me exactly what they're doing. No idea.
Waymo. It's Waymo Meta.
Way more better. Hey, you from Hawaii, Brian? That guy is so much way more better. But that they are actually going to be making the hardware themselves, Google is, and that the LiDAR sensors can cost up to $75,000 per sensor component group. And that what Waymo has done is decreased the price of that by 90% in their manufacturing research.
Yeah.
So to be able to shave $68,000 off of this component is a huge advantage to them. And so the fact that they have such compelling evidence that this guy has stolen the design components, I don't know if you, most people know this, what was the whole story was that a supplier for Waymo accidentally emailed them with, they thought they were emailing Otto. Oops. And they included Otto's new design spec, which looked, exactly like Waymo's.
What?
So then Waymo went back and did a forensic investigation and found that this, it's not Lewandowski, it's Lewandowski.
Lewandowski, yeah.
Lewandowski, who came
different
from.
Term.
Different guy.
Right.
This different guy, no connection with the Ukraine. Okay, good. Just right. Checking. Yeah.
So anyways, so they have, I mean, it's a total smoking gun in the way that it's written up in Google's.
I mean, obviously Waymo has a point here, and I bet they'll win and whatever. But there is also the argument about what is Google doing? I mean, they were years ahead, and they just sat on. Oh, we're going to license. We're not going to license. We're just going to not do anything. We're going to partner. They keep changing their minds, and meanwhile, the competitors have caught up and in some cases lapped them.
Why you are completely right and completely wrong, David. And here's why.
You sound like my wife.
And let me tell you why. That's the key.
Let me tell you why. Because I think that they had the technology, but we weren't mentally prepared for self-driving cars. So unlike Microsoft, which has the unfortunate habit of releasing technology we're not yet ready for and then getting skunked on it 10 years later, I think that they were waiting for public opinion and public awareness to catch up to the technology that they already owned. That's my personal opinion on why you're both totally right and totally wrong.
I feel like you could say that about everything in the Google Labs, you know, the face recognition, the robots. They've got it. We're just not ready for it.
Yeah, and it doesn't work consistently enough.
Right.
Until it works as well as that silver thing behind me where you open it up and the light goes on and it keeps all my food cold. You know, that's consistent performance. Yeah, I want to see my technology have that kind of performance.
Can you tweet? That's a Samsung, I think. Can you tweet from that refrigerator?
No, but it hasn't caught on fire either.
Okay, that's good. I actually had a call from somebody who had a Samsung refrigerator with an internet connection, and it used to have his calendar on it, but then Google changed the calendar API, and the Samsung refrigerator has no updates, so the calendar doesn't work anymore. This is why you don't put a calendar in a refrigerator.
I fooled around with those Samsung refrigerators at CES, the ones with the big touch screen on the front.
Yeah.
And first of all, the scrolling speed was like, you know, a Palm Pilot from 1996. It was just so balky and slow. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're going to spend $12,000 for a refrigerator that will seem obsolete. Well, next year.
Put a Raspberry Pi in it. Why cheap out on the processor, for crying out loud?
Unbelievable.
Or just a space you could snap an iPad into it. Like a little dock.
Yeah,
I'd rather have that.
Right.
Snap. Pop it out.
I don't know if I really need a computer in my fridge, but that's another story entirely. Did you buy that for GMA, Becky? Is that a GMA fridge behind you there? Or?
Yeah, she's on a set right now.
Yeah.
Yes, this is my
fake. It's too pretty. This can't be a real kitchen.
Yeah, Rachel Ray will be by shortly for a quick minute meal.
My goodness, there's a pie already cooked in the oven. Look at that. I want to take a break, and then we're going to talk about Snap and the Snap IPO. Should you or should you not jump on Snap? Snap's had its own, as I mentioned, its own issues, and there's some question about whether if Snap's IPOing at the peak. It's kind of the OMG, what is it, OMG pop phenomenon. Remember that? Yeah. Draw Something? That was the app that was the hottest app in existence. Then Zynga bought it, and they bought them at the absolute peak. Maybe the same thing with Snap. I don't know. Let's talk about Eero, though, first. You know what? It's a year old. Eero, happy birthday, Eero. Eero created the mesh Wi-Fi that's changing the world. And it is an amazing solution. Everybody knows Wi-Fi has become a problem because there's so few reasons. There's so many Wi-Fi, you know, networks in your area, congestion, but also our houses are bigger. We're doing more. We're sending more stuff over Wi-Fi. A single router model, which was great 5 years ago, just doesn't work. You need a distributed system. You need Eero. Eero, the world's first whole home Wi-Fi system. It blankets the entire home in fast, reliable Wi-Fi. No more buffering, no more dead zones. And this is not a repeater. This is not a Wi-Fi extender. Eero is much smarter than that. It's a mesh system, which means, oh, what do we have there? Is that an Eero? I see it.
Oh, yep. Look right here, my whole house is running on Eeros right now. Love them.
It really was a transformation.
Sitting up on top of my bookshelf up there, yeah.
Eero, you manage it through an app. It's nice because they've managed to make something that's very easy and straightforward to set up and use. But if you dig deep, they have features that even some high-priced, you know, fancy geek routers don't have. They come with more memory and power than you need currently to zap Wi-Fi. That means that they can upgrade it. They overbuilt the Eero. I don't know if people realize this, but, you know, for instance, they just had the 2.0 update, which enhances to the new mesh. But there's even more capability because they overbuilt it. They put more CPU and more memory in there so they can add all sorts of things. Eero is one of the only routers that gets updated automatically all the time. Plus, as you can see, there's no need to hide it. It looks great. State-of-the-art WPA2 encryption, of course. Great customer support, of course. I actually tested them and called them up and said, oh, I can't get my Minecraft server working. And they were great. They stayed on the line until it was working. I was very impressed. You've seen them everywhere, including, we've talked about them, 4.4 stars on Amazon, 750 reviews, 1 year warranty. It, of course, will work with your existing modem and internet service, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. Eero was the original. To celebrate their first birthday, they have permanently lowered prices. Who does that? $3.99 for the three-pack. That's $100 off. $2.99 for a two-pack. Each Eero is worth good for about 1,500 square feet. So many people, a two-pack would be plenty. And the nice thing is you can always add more Eeros as you need them. To get Eero at its new low price, Eero.com or Best Buy or Amazon to celebrate one Eero of Eero. Eero.com or Best Buy or Amazon. Everybody loves Eero. Everybody loves their Eero. Snap, I guess the latest is they're going to probably do their IPO this week, like Wednesday, March 1st. And it's going to be big.
$20 billion?
$20 billion. They're going to, initial price, we're not sure, but the, you know, they haven't announced $14 to $16 a share. That'd give it a $22.2 billion market cap at that price. That's considerably above their last private valuation, which was $17.8 billion. They will have the New York Stock Exchange symbol SNAP. That's a good, easy one to remember. Like Uber, like a lot of companies, they have great revenue. $404 million in revenue last year. That's up from $58 million a year before. They also have great losses. Revenue does not necessarily mean profit. Their net loss, okay, remember, $404 million in revenue, they lost $514 million. In other words, they spent $500 million to make $400 million. Not a good business in the long run.
But they'll make it up in volume.
The year before, they lost $372 million. They are close to having lost $1 billion in 2 years.
Did you read the piece by Owen Williams in Medium this week? And I, you know, it's an anecdotal piece about his experience noticing that more and more people are just not using Snapchat. His sort of friends dropped off.
He said, why I'm leaving Snapchat and so are all your friends.
Well, I had an anecdotal evidence of that too. I mean, just listening to the, I don't know where it was, and there was like a group of teenage, it was like a Panera or something, and they were all teenage girls. They were talking, they're on their phones, and they were on Instagram, and they were doing stories, and they were just sharing. But one of them mentioned something about Snapchat, and the other just kind of jumped in and said, "Oh, you know, I don't use that, or we're not on that anymore. We don't use that anymore." And I thought, at least I was never on it to begin with, but you know, I'm good. I survived that little technology spike, and now I've made it back to the cool kids. Yeah, but just when you start to see people around you, whether it's kids and you know 20 somethings and 30 somethings, and they're using Instagram stories. You know, which came out, what, about a year ago now, Instagram stories. And at the time, everyone was like, oh, that's kind of cute. You know, they're trying to mock, you know, trying
they completely
to
copy Snapchat. Snapchat stories, right?
And they have the ability to because, you know, I mean, more so many people are on Instagram and it's just a natural extension of that platform. And, you know, with the live and advertising, you know, it's like, how does Snapchat making money?
Well, they're not, right?
So Clayton,
although
you,
I thought they would, frankly, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've admitted
you,
to hanging out.
You said that
Panera.
You don't use Snapchat, but I'm going
to
perform an astonishing feat of mind reading over the internet. Ready? Let me see. Leo, you don't use Snapchat either.
Actually,
Becky,
I use.
Wait. I feel you don't either.
You are amazing.
I use Snapchat. You're wrong, David. I use Snapchat all the time. I love Snapchat. Snapchat is awesome. I don't have any.
What the hell is a story? What is a story?
I use the story. So let's I'll tell you what. I'll get out of this. One of the reasons a lot of adults don't use Snapchat is because it's completely opaque, right? Nobody can figure out how to use it. And oh, look, Jimmy Kimmel's just appeared. See, this is how they make money. There's an Oscar. Snapchat filter. Hi, kids. I now have lipstick and sunglasses. So
you look great.
This is why I use it because it's funny. And it, but by the way, Instagram and others have added these kinds of capabilities. Facebook just bought a company that MSQR
Masquerade,
which does an amazing job and arguably better than Snapchat. And I'm sure that we'll see that in Instagram soon.
Those filters are so addictive.
But they're addictive. And I do, and I can record this. I can save it to a story that easily, and now people, you know, strangers can see my snaps.
But is that worth $20 billion? I mean, that's a feature, right? I mean, how easy is that? I mean, that's a feature.
Well, WhatsApp sold for $22 billion to Facebook. That was arguably not much more interesting than Snapchat.
But I guess what I was driving at is that 80%. Last time I looked at it, 80%. Of Snapchat users are female, and a huge percentage, like 60%, are under 25.
Yeah, it's young women, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. It's 13-year-old girls. So I didn't know.
More moms are using it though because they're girls.
Some my hairdresser uses it, and she loves the news feature on Snapchat because it doesn't come from anyone she knows, and so therefore it's not imbued with any negative feelings.
Unfortunately, and Snapchat is kind of Snap has addressed this. The news feature for a long time was just pictures of Kim Kardashian's butt because
that is news.
Yeah, well, mostly because the companies who put the news on here realized, like mostly the Daily Mail, realized, hey, if we put her butt on there, people are going to click on it. Snapchat actually made rules just a few weeks ago to eliminate that kind of clickbait. So you see how much more boring this is than it used to be. Oh, wait a minute. Is Daily Mail still has something, a young woman in some sort of lingerie on the front. It got really bad at one point. There was a story. What was it? I think it was a Wired story or something about guys using a technology, and they had a picture of a girl in a bikini on the front page just to get you to click it. It got out of control. I see the power of Snap, but I think what you've brought up, Clayton, is interesting, which is anything based on a social graph, including Facebook, is very vulnerable if its users, like those teenagers in Panera, decide en masse to move, right? You go where your friends are.
But I'm confused by Facebook, and maybe that's why they bought WhatsApp. Maybe that's why they bought Instagram. Facebook, it's where everyone is just by mass, by volume.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, I don't know. I mean, are kids using Facebook? Are they even on Facebook?
No, well, that was the theory, right, was that they're using Snapchat. Because it's the anti-Facebook, and I look at my son who's 22 and is a big Snapchat user, and all his friends are Snapchat users. They don't participate in Facebook or Instagram, a little bit Instagram, but mostly Snapchat because it's disposable, right? The pictures go away.
But how is Facebook such a behemoth? I mean, look, when you look at their ads platform and you look what they're able to do with ads, there is no better. I mean, it's arguably there's no better driver of traffic. I mean, like we said this before, if you're a small business, you know, you're a pet store in a small village, in a small town.
You better be on Facebook.
Because you can do such micro-targeted smart advertising just to pet owners who live in your zip code and who are able to then to come into your town, and you can offer them a coupon to come in and say hello. You just open your store and say hello and I'd like to meet you, and et cetera, et cetera. You're developing that relationship with that pet owner in that town. It's phenomenal. I mean, there's no better way to connect with, you know, for businesses and to drive traffic that way than using Facebook ads. I mean, it really is. And then to retarget those people who were kind of like, eh, I don't want to kind of go in, but maybe I would next month, retarget those people. So I'm just curious. I'm confused by that, though. If so many people are saying, eh, Facebook's not cool, then how is Facebook such a behemoth and continuing to see such phenomenal growth?
Let's look at it this way.
We're talking about Snapchat.
Let's think about Snapchat as Justin Bieber. Okay. You got a huge fan following of the perfect demographic that every advertiser wants so that they can hook you for life.
Bingo. That's why Snap's hot, right?
But the problem is that it's hard to know if they're going to stay with you or move on to the next hot artist.
They're fickle.
Facebook is more like the label. They are constantly trying to cultivate new stuff that's going to be hot, maybe not with that perfect demo, but with the bell curve. And they're always looking to see if they can get an up-and-comer because they have the money to do it.
Well, and the fact that Facebook was able to buy Instagram and that Instagram is now eating Snapchat's lunch proves your point. If Facebook needs to expand into an area, they can buy WhatsApp or they can buy Instagram and... like buying an artist.
I'm so bearish on this. I think this IPO is not a good bet. And obviously people are going to go for IPOs like this because they think there's a chance that they might get a 10x return, even though they know that that's very, very, it's like your one time only chance to be a VC. The number one reason why I'm bearish is because I don't see any opportunity for them to have any horizontal expansion of use. So you look at, you know, what they do so well is this sense of the ephemeral, of fun, of connecting in the moment. But that doesn't necessarily grow with you, and it doesn't have a lot of expansion capability. I mean, it's kind of like Disney, you know, in the feel of it. And Disney's figured out how to create this huge horizontal umbrella of vertically integrated businesses. I don't see anything in the core values of Snap that would create more value.
What about the argument that they are a camera company? You know, we saw, you know, Snap Spectacles last year roll out, and now they're going to be available, you know, not just in those little kiosks that you could have to fly to some town in, you know, Deadwood, South Dakota to find them, but you could actually get them more readily.
I actually bought mine at a premium on eBay just so I could.
How much did you pay for them?
Actually, only $200, so it wasn't a huge premium.
How often do you use them now?
They're sitting on my dresser charging.
Yeah, I figured.
But it was cool to have. And I wanted it, you know, I mean, it's part of my job is to see, you know, what is going on here. Doesn't this remind you, though, a little bit of the conversation went before Facebook went public and people saying, come on, they haven't licked mobile. They're going to be completely disenfranchised once everybody goes to their phone. There was a lot of debate over whether people should buy Facebook stock.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the question was at the time that their ads platform, it was nascent and people were wondering, is this really going to catch on? And, you know, they're going up against the beast that's Google, you know, that's Google AdWords. Are you going to be able to, you know, slay that beast? And it turns out,
they did. I said at the time, if you're buying Facebook, you're betting on Mark Zuckerberg. That's what you're betting on. You're betting on that this guy will figure it out.
Despite Alan Kay's words to the contrary, that all software companies should make their own hardware, is there a good example of an app or software company going into the hardware business that has been successful? I mean, I think of hardware as the death knell. I mean, just talk to GoPro or, you know, some of the other hardware companies, especially camera companies, to your point, Clayton, that have bombed.
Well, Amazon. Right. That's the big counterexample.
Yeah, they've done quite well with Echo and tablets.
Good point.
Right.
Not the Fire Phone. Microsoft went from being a software company to being a software and hardware company.
But at its core, Snapchat is a camera app, right?
App.
It's a camera
you're not saying a physical camera. You're saying the app.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we see Spectacles as sort of like a whimsical play on that idea of the app. But this idea that the Snapchat camera filter could pop up in the Facebook app that, you want to take a snap inside your Facebook app as a feature. I mean, that's where I could see it going, but I don't see it. Yeah, to your point, Becky, I don't see it expanding across horizons. We're going to have a Snapchat-style home theater device that we're going to be able to say, hey, Snap, what's the weather today? You know, I'm going to get some answers, and it's going to be able to open my garage door. I don't know. I like what you said, Becky.
For it to grow with the audience. Like, I don't see a 39-year-old mom in 20 years, you know, sending a snap to her PTA friend, like, why now, bitches? You know, like, that's not, I don't see that happening.
I think you made the right point, which is that you compared it to labels and artists, but I'd say platform versus apps. That Facebook's a platform, and that Snapchat's just an app. And yet, just as when I said, you know, if you're investing in Facebook stock, you're investing in Mark Zuckerberg, you could say you're investing in Evan Spiegel, the founder of Snap. This guy has shown that he knows how to at least reach that very valuable demographic.
Can I turn the conversation to Mark Zuckerberg's letter and manifesto?
We can do that
week?
In a moment. Yes.
I'm interested in your thoughts.
Yeah,
I want to hear what you think.
David, before we move on, would you, I mean, look, first of all, anybody who takes stock advice from us is nuts. That's given. And I don't know about you, but I don't buy tech stocks for, you know, because I don't want to have an investment in any of these companies. But give us some advice. Would you buy Snap stock?
I wouldn't. And I would argue that the entire premise of our conversation here today is there's this Business Insider guy saying, I've stopped using it and I know this is anecdotal. Yes, it's anecdotal.
Right.
Your whole argument is ridiculous. And even with all due respect, you know, I saw some people in Panera Bread not using. That's not a real.
Well, there are numbers,
survey.
Though. There are
David,
numbers.
I hang out in Panera Bread every day with a clipboard.
There are numbers that show that Instagram has, in fact, taken a lot of business from Snapchat, right? Snapchat
right.
growth slowed 82% after Instagram Stories launched.
I think that's a far more telling data point. And for that reason, I wouldn't invest. You can see it slowing down there. There you go.
Yeah.
I just can't see this thing being around in 10 years or 5 years.
Yeah.
It's a one-trick pony.
I have to say, when I saw Instagram Stories, I thought, well, that's a Snapchat ripoff. Why would anybody do that? But there's something I don't understand really what's going on about the migration to Instagram. I do not understand that. I don't think it's as appealing as it looks like an old person's app compared to Snap, which was felt like a kid's app, you know, a fun app.
I would
argue that. For the record, does it play in Peoria has become does it play at Panera?
Yes.
That's the new, especially in New Jersey, right, Clayton? You know,
that's right.
Oh, we got Panera everywhere. Panera is a very good measure.
I did an explainer for Yahoo Finance a couple months ago on Snapchat for those who don't know what it is, which is most people. And there's a lot of psychology to it that, again, limits it to this particular age and gender bracket. For example, Leo, you were pointing out how opaque it is, how hard to use, how non-intuitive. And I actually think that's part of it.
I agree.
Like, teens and preteens want something that their parents can't use and won't understand. And, you know, in terms of the large female teenager thing, it's been argued that that's because women, girls, are so constantly judged today for their looks, for their behavior, for their clothing, that something that lets you send an unfiltered snap of yourself where it's not going to come back to haunt you, it's not going to be judged, is this huge psychological burden lifted. And again, though, that's kind of unique to, I mean, not solely unique, but that's a lot of teenage girls who
you're right about that. It's like the opaqueness is what we saw in iOS 10 with the Messages app. I mean, navigate that if you're my mom. You're not going to be able to do it. But if you're a teenage girl, you're going to be able to find all these hidden things inside of the Messages app and on purpose. Look at Pokemon Go. it's pretty opaque, and you're trying to find and navigate through that to find it, try to figure out different menus and submenus. And it's part of the fun of the hunting and pecking of that game. I wouldn't be surprised in a future version of iOS, we see a self-destructing photo feature that, you know, Sherlock's the idea of the disappearing photo, you know, from Snapchat.
There's a word, affordance, that user interface design people use. That is, an affordance is a capability of an object. Like you look at a doorknob and you can kind of intuit that it turns, and you know, if it's got, you know, you could push a push plate and you pull a handle. There's certain information you gather from looking at it. And of course, Snapchat and more recently Apple's Messages have all these hidden features. And I'm of the opinion it's intentional that these hidden affordances are actually a social tool because they encourage people to share, look, I figured out how to do this, and mm-hmm. show other people. And it actually helps their word of mouth. I think Snapchat almost proved that by being completely opaque. Hey, yeah, it hid it from parents. And you know, there was an in-group who had understood it and an out-group who didn't. And then people who were in the out-group and didn't understand it, but were buddies with people who did, wanted to be in the in-group. So the buddies got some social reputation by saying, oh, I know how to do that. Watch you do that. And then you're in the in-group. And I think that was part of how it spread. But I also think that Apple saw this and said, we should probably put some hidden affordances in Messages and see if the same thing can happen. And I don't know if it did, but I do have to admit, I've spent a lot of time with my 83-year-old mother showing her how to make balloons appear on an Apple Message. When you do that, see what happens when you do that, you send a message to somebody and they get the confetti or the fireworks or the laser show. The first question is, how'd you do that?
How'd you do that? Exactly.
And you get some social currency by saying, oh, well, I'll show you.
Well, I certainly hope you're wrong. I mean, Apple's whole thing has
it's opposite.
A scream toward user interface, simplicity, clear away the hidden crap.
Yep.
I mean, this would be a radical change.
But it is. But don't you think David Apple's going through exactly that?
Well, I'm not.
It's opposite day in Cupertino.
The question is it intentional? I mean, yes. Apple Music, when it came out,
well, that's just crappy.
A disaster.
That's just crappy. I don't think that's
intentional.
A steaming
pile. And what did they do? Did that make it popular?
No.
Did that make it hit? No.
That was just bad design.
That was just bad design.
I think Messages clearly with these hidden features was a play to this.
I think they tried to do it. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's hard to say. I think that they're both things were at play. Apple Music was just bad. And I think Messages is not bad. This is an attempt to try this, especially because it's so closely related to Snapchat. I mean, it's in the same field and that kind of thing.
But why would you assume that one is just clueless?
because... Apple Music, there's no social cred to be gained by saying, I know how to use that feature and showing somebody. You just stop using the thing. You say, I can't, this is a piece of crap.
Well, and also iMessages is the number one app on the iPhone.
Right.
It's used more than any other app by a landslide on the iPhone. It's not a mistake that they made it. They made it this interesting and this complex and multi-layered.
David, you and I are, you know, original Apple fans. I mean, this is how you got in the business, right? It's showing composers how to use Apple computers, Macintoshes, right? We've been Apple guys from way, way back. And it's a very different company than it was. The company that we fell in love with, the computer for the rest of us.
Oh, yeah.
It's
not even recognizable.
No.
It's completely different. I do this series of 30-second tip videos for Yahoo Finance called Pogue's Basics.
Yep.
And one of the most popular one was how to hang up a call on the iPhone.
I see the green bar. I know I'm in a call.
Oh my God.
But in iOS 10, they've taken away the hang up button. The red X is gone. So what happens is you're on a phone call. After a certain point, the screen goes dark. And once it's dark, the hang up button is gone when you wake it.
It's so crazy.
So you have to know to tap the name of the person. And then unlock it, and then you can hit hang up.
I got to watch your videos because I don't know. I just basically, I put the phone aside and hope the other person will hang up.
Okay,
they're just listening to you for the next hour and a half.
If they don't hang up right away, I start singing out of key. That usually doesn't
work. Well, actually, Apple wants you to buy AirPods, so you just double tap on the AirPod.
Actually, I found a tip for hanging up an iPhone call. Do you think anyone wants to know?
Yes, please.
Hit the sleep switch. It makes it go dark and hangs up the call.
Oh, that's clever. That's nice. Yeah.
But they don't tell you that.
They don't tell you that. So there, I think that's bad design, not the magic of hidden affordances.
Right? Yeah, that's just bad design.
That's just bad design. Let's talk about Mark and his 6,800-word Facebook, The Unabomber Manifesto, as written by Mark Zuckerberg, and what it all means. Because there's some interest. Did we talk about this last week? I feel like we've talked about it. I think not. Ben Thompson from Stratechery had a very interesting take on it. Others have said this is Mark's first salvo in his run for president for 2020. What does it all mean? Becky wants to talk about it. Becky gets whatever she wants.
Oh, I like this show even more.
Greatest. Becky Worley from Good Morning America, my old friend. We worked together at Tech TV for many years, and it's always wonderful to have you on. Clayton Morris from Fox and Friends, another great old dear friend, and of course married to another great old dear friend. Well, she probably wouldn't want me to call her old. Natalie Morris, it's great to have you on. And I you'll have to at some point explain your 4-foot-tall stormtrooper behind you. It's a little scary.
He's here to watch and make sure that I don't go off the rails.
Oh! Did you get that at Toy Fair? That is awesome.
No, my buddy was thinking of a Christmas present to get me, and so he had ordered me a water pick for some reason. I don't know if he thought I had like beans in my teeth. And I said, "What did you order me a water pick for?" And then suddenly these huge boxes show up at the house the one day, and he's like, "I want to get you something fun." And these are not for the kids, by the way. And they're like 4.5 foot tall Star Wars figures. So the stormtrooper.
There's more than one.
There's a Darth Vader that I put up in my son's room to keep him, make sure he goes to sleep on time.
He's gonna have nightmares.
Yeah. We put them strategically around the house to scare off vagrants and robbers when we're out of town.
But he also sent you a water pick.
No, he returned the water pick.
He didn't say, "Clayton, let's talk about gingivitis."
When I'm out of town, I'm going to have him sit at my computer so people, when they look through the window, they think that someone's home.
That's pretty funny.
We're doing some work.
That's a good deal. I would, you can send me a water pick if you feel bad about it and give me Darth Vader later. That's great. That's awesome. Also, another great friend, David Pogue. Known him for years. What the great tech writer. He's got the new Missing Manual, OS 10 Sierra, Mac OS. I guess you have to call it Mac OS now, Mac OS Sierra. And, of course, Pogue's Basics, which is a series of books that help you live life better. And you see him at Yahoo Finance in the tech section. He's the tech editor for Yahoo Finance. Last time you were on, you had a new – you have Pogue's Basics. What's the newest one?
The newest one is Money.
Money.
200 loopholes in life and society that let you pay less for things.
So you've done tech, you've done life. What was it the other
one? Wow, look at all those stars. Wow.
Look at that. 4.5 stars, 60 customer reviews. I didn't know much about life, and I certainly didn't know much about money until I read David Pogue's Basics. That's awesome. That's fantastic. We are glad all three of you are here. You make TWIT worth living. Our show,
Leo, I'm concerned for you.
I know. That sounded really dark.
Is that a plea for help?
That was really dark.
You should model your slogans more on Uber, I think.
When you're drunk at 1 a.m., what else are you going to do but listen to TWIT? We will have more in a moment. Our show today brought to you by my web host. They do my site, leolaporte.com. They do so many people's sites. That's what I'm talking, of course, about Squarespace. Squarespace is the best place to create your next thing. It's never too late to reinvent yourself, change careers, launch a creative project, make your next move known to the world with Squarespace, the best hosting plus the best templates to give you a site that looks like you're a web wizard. You don't have to know any HTML or CSS. You just take a template. They've got the best engineering, the best designers. By the way, if you are a designer, if you're a developer, Squarespace is a great platform for you, too. They've got a developer platform. You just check a box. You have access to all the code. You can modify it. You start with a great template, and you can enhance it. Select a template that fits your vision. Actually, I'll tell you what. Go right now to squarespace.com. Click that Get Started button, and you can start designing a site right now at no cost. Pick a template. They've got some really nice news-style grid templates. They've got full bleed, image templates. So if you're a photographer, for instance, and you want your images to sing, it'd be great for a portfolio. Every Squarespace site, though, has commerce built in, which is awesome. It's, in fact, the only platform I know of that will let you create, manage, and brand an online store that doesn't look like just something, an afterthought, hanging off of your site. It has the same design as your site. It fits in and integrated beautifully into your site. But you have all these nice features, including Squarespace Analytics, so you can, with visual, beautiful visual reports that let you keep track of page views and conversions and popular content. Immediately, the minute you press the button to set up the store, you can start taking credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay. They integrate with MailChimp as well as many other things, but if you want to do an email campaign or a newsletter, that's easy. Calendars, lists of events. You can take RSVPs right from the site. It's the most powerful, most sophisticated site. RSS is built in too, of course, so you can publish directly from your blog. Be great for a podcast, for that matter. Update your content once and you share it across all your social media platforms. And not only that, but your visitors can do the same. Share and pin it buttons let them share your content to their followers. Pursue your passion. Make your next move with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com. Try it for free, but if you decide to buy, don't forget to use TWIT as the offer code because you'll get 10% off. That's squarespace.com and the offer code TWIT. I should show you Leo Laporte. I think maybe Becker's in what I have a slideshow to be at the front page of images. I gotta add you three to my slideshow.
I want that one of us when you're dressed up as the sumo suit.
Oh yeah, at the party. Yeah.
I like that one.
We had some wild
old
times. That was old school. Yeah. that was a fun party.
One of many.
So, did you actually read Mark Zuckerberg's 6,000 word piece?
No, I read pieces of it, but
I tried.
The summaries, yeah, tell me what. I know you said you fell off a cliff with it.
Well, I mean, you start reading it, and your initial reaction, at least my initial reaction, is this is just a bunch of businessy kind of gobbledygook. But a number of people kind of swayed me into thinking this is almost a global power grab from Mark Zuckerberg. Here's an article by Jan Dawson and Recode. Mark Zuckerberg wants Facebook to have more power in our lives and we should resist. But the one that was most dramatic was Ben Thompson's article in Stratechery. He addressed directly the rumor that Mark might be interested in politics in a presidential run, saying, why would Mark Zuckerberg, Mark owns Facebook and Facebook owns a social graph. Given this reality, why would Zuckerberg want to be president? He's not only the CEO of Facebook, he's the dominant shareholder, answerable to no one. His power and ability to influence is greater than any president, subject to political reality and checks and balances. And besides, as Zuckerberg made clear last week, his concern is not mere country, but rather the entire world.
I disagree with you. I don't think he is unanswerable to, he's answerable to no one. And I think this is at the heart of what this is about. Facebook sent me a summary that they approved for what this letter was about, in case people like us couldn't read the whole thing.
Explain it, okay. The cliff notes,
Right. The most important, these are the two points that I think are really interested. For the past decade, Facebook has focused on connecting friends and families. With that foundation, our next focus will be developing the social infrastructure for a connected global community. Up until today, Facebook has focused on, it's the same thing. It said it twice. They felt so strongly about it. Sorry.
did you read that first sentence? Let me say it again.
Yeah. So my point about he answers to no one, you know who he answers to? Priscilla Chan.
His wife.
And, you know, this is a man. Did you ever see the video of him speaking Chinese?
Yeah. He learned Mandarin.
You don't do that lightly.
No.
And I don't think that's just we got to get into China and we really want to be in China because it's a good business decision. I think that this is the complete 180 view of the world from Donald Trump. This is so not nationalistic. It's so
this
globalist.
Is a response to Trump.
This is a complete response.
Yeah.
And then that SEC filing you saw too back that was it from April, buried in that SEC filing, was that he has the ability that if he takes a leave of absence from Facebook, that if and it would not constitute a voluntary resignation if it were in connection with him running for public office.
Furthermore, he can serve in government and still run Facebook, this filing said. So they restructured, as part of the restructure, they restructured how the rules work for Mark Zuckerberg. So it does indicate, I think, you know, and he's also on a 50-state tour, right? You saw the pictures of him in Alabama, right?
How do you guys think he would be as president?
Well, that's the thing. You have to be a dynamic speaker. And I think he's been – that's also interesting.
If you can learn Mandarin, you can learn to give a speech.
Right. And what I mean, my point is he used to be awful at it.
Yeah, he's gotten better.
And he's not awful anymore. And he's gotten a lot – he's gotten a lot better. I mean, he's nowhere nearly as bad as Elon Musk giving a speech. Did you see Elon Musk giving a speech for the unveiling of the solar panels?
Yeah.
That was awful. Yeah. It was maybe one of the worst public speeches I've ever
seen. They have opposite reactions to public speaking. Do you remember the Recode, the All Things D, where Mark was just sweating profusely?
Oh, yeah. But that was old Mark. Yeah.
Elon's like, he goes narcoleptic.
Right.
I mean, he speaks with the most bored tone about the most ridiculously insane things. It's so disorienting.
Right. He's like, we just landed on Mars. I just want to let everyone know.
You know, I know a lot of people.
I know a lot
of people who love that because they find it refreshing and authentic. And one thing do get from a lot of keynote speakers and CEOs is this phony rah-rah. You know, just you know, do a extract of Apple keynotes and all the superlatives. And it after a while, it just starts to go, you know, come on, guys, just be normal.
But I think we're quickly learning that bad and talent-free might be refreshing.
Yes.
But it's also bad and talent-free.
Well, yeah, okay.
It's authentic. Authenticity is the coin of the realm
I think so, yeah. I mean, no one could argue that Donald Trump is an eloquent public speaker, but there's something about his ability to speak that connects with people very clearly.
Yeah, eloquent is not the word.
It's not eloquent, but nevertheless, it's authentic and it's impactful, and I would argue it's persuasive to some. Anyway,
like what's the end game though for him? I'm trying to wrap my head around what would be the purpose.
Well, I do agree with Ben that why would he want to be a president? That's a job that is considerably a step down.
Well, it's very limited.
It's limited.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very limited role, and as even President Trump is now experiencing with for his first 100 days, whether or not he's going to be able to get tax reform through, and these sort of marginalized Republican candidates in certain districts are feeling squeezed about Obamacare, and they have to be answerable to that. So it's not going to be as clear sailing as anyone thinks it is when you just have all this power.
Don't you have to be 18 to run for president?
You know what's interesting? Zuckerberg just passes the constitutional requirement in August of 2019.
Oh, man.
Or 2020. I guess it's of 2020, which would be the filing deadline for a presidential run in November. So he can squeak in under the wire. He'd be the youngest candidate, or one of the youngest candidates, if not the youngest candidate ever.
Hey, Ted Cruz was Canadian. He ran.
There you go. Obama was Kenyan, so it's possible. No.
Do you guys have Facebook fan pages or pages where you?
I ignore it, but I have it.
Have you ever looked at the metrics of where your people are from?
No, I should.
Okay, I'm going to give you a little quiz. So, 5,000 likes on Facebook.
Yeah.
Where do you think give me my top two or three cities where people are coming from. Guess.
Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay, good guess. Good Morning America, that's me. Where else, Leo?
I would say St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
Dayton, Ohio.
We're talking
David,
middle,
any guesses?
Middle America here, right?
Yeah, it's going to be Middle America. It's going to be Des Moines.
Here we go. Top 10.
Yeah.
Singapore.
What?
Quezon City.
What?
Metro Manila. Dubai. Karachi, Pakistan.
No, come on. That's bizarre.
Manila. New York City is number 6.
Those are
Los
all
Angeles,
bots.
Number 7.
Those are all bots.
Maybe. Manila again. Riyadh. Jakarta.
What the what?
How's that?
Yep. Where are you finding this info, by the way?
If you go to Insights and People.
You get a lot of insight. Yeah. I don't know how fair it is to use mine because I don't really cultivate these.
I've spent a lot more time on this lately than Twitter because I feel like I get so much more, and there's so much more diversity in the type of material that you can publish.
My fan base is predictable in terms of countries, U.S., Canada, United Kingdom, Australia, English language countries. Number one, Los Angeles. That's because of the radio show. Number two, New York. Number three, San Jose, San Diego. See how much more, I don't know, something's going on with your stuff.
Well, I do a lot of tips and tricks, like that sounded bad, but.
And they love tricks in Quezon City. Yeah.
Don't do the tricks for tips.
my most
Becky
popular
Worley
video
is our private dancer. I love it.
That sounded bad. My most popular video is about Excel. How to manipulate an Excel spreadsheet.
I know if I'm looking how to work Excel, I go to Good Morning America. That's absolutely.
That's right, baby.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't. Yeah, I mean, if I use this more, I would certainly pay attention to it.
I guess my point is that the global business is the Facebook business.
Yeah.
Not just his worldview.
That's the thing about Zuckerberg's note is, on one hand, it was an anti-Trump cry. We're all people. We're one planet. We're all just together in this. And on the other hand, that fits very nicely with Facebook's master business plan. I mean, of course they want no barriers.
Right. I looked at it. I couldn't quite figure out what he was trying to say. What the underlying motivation was there. It wasn't clear to me. He went from a one-sentence mission statement to his 5,800-word mission statement that wasn't completely clear. So, Apple is
too many words to get elected. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. He's gonna have to. He's gonna have to shorten.
He's
gonna
have to whittle that down to three words.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he needs a slogan. You know, make Facebook great again. I don't know.
Call us at 1 a.m. when you're drunk.
Oh, give peace a chance. I don't know. Apple has announced that it's going to open the new campus in April. They're going to start moving in employees. It's going to take them a long time. 12,000 people will be moved in over 6 months. And it's not done. They're still going to be working on buildings and parklands. This is the amazing spaceship campus, 2.8 million square foot main building. Clad in the world's largest panels of curved glass. This is the theater, which is where you guys will all go when you get invitations to Apple events.
Which you won't.
Not that I'm jealous or anything.
Not that somebody else here didn't get banned because of you.
Oh, yeah, you got banned because of me, right.
I got banned because of you. But that was...
Whoa,
that
tell
was
that story. What?
She jumped Steve Jobs, and I don't know, somehow... He jumped you?
Again, this sounds wrong. Exactly. Here are those tips and tricks. No, I was FaceTiming with Leo from the Magic Room. You know, the place where you go look at the new stuff afterwards. I either call it the Champagne Room or the Magic Room. Both sound really good. But I was FaceTiming Leo from there, and Steve Jobs came up to me and was asking what I was doing and didn't realize that I was basically live casting. And
so he came up to you?
He came up to me.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And then you asked him, when are you going to open up FaceTime, like you promised?
That didn't go over well.
And that's when you got talked to the hand. But you haven't been invited to an Apple event since then?
No, they're still mad.
Wow. They hold. Yeah. Wow. I plan to, and maybe you guys can help me, because I know Clayton goes, and I absolutely know David goes. I plan to get on my knees and beg Katie Cotton, or actually, she's not there anymore. I have to figure
she's
out
gone.
Whoever's there and say, please, I just want to go to the first event at this new place. It's 1,000 seats. It's bigger than the old Apple event auditorium. That was only about half the size.
They should have a journalist amnesty program.
I need a little amnesty. Just need a little amnesty.
Like, you just go to Guantanamo Bay for the year.
Yeah. Whatever it takes. I will do a little state time.
If
you want me to crawl on my hands and knees to Cupertino from here, and anything, whatever it takes. I would really
like
to.
We were wrong. Apple was right.
Yes.
We were wrong. Apple was right.
That's right. I think I'm going to have. There it is. There's. This is Becky Worley. And,
oh, my God.
I like it, Steve. Steve's making the rounds, talking to the people.
This was our special.
By the way, a first for us, a FaceTime call.
to the Apple campus.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. It's funny, they're going to name the theater at the new facility after him, nice. which I think appropriate.
Yeah, I think that's nice.
And it's a long time. He'd be 62 next week. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I read that. That's
February 24th. And so they're naming it the Steve Jobs Theater. It's atop of a hill with one of the highest points within Apple Park, by the way, is what they're calling this new complex, overlooking meadows in the main building.
And that's a carbon fiber roof, one giant piece.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they plopped it on top. It's kind of, yeah. This is, wow. I mean, this is in some ways Steve's last creation. He, shortly before he died, he went to the Cupertino City Council to plead to get the permits to do it. And he was had a big hand in the design of it along with Johnny Ive. And I think it's very appropriate. It's beautiful.
What are the pros and cons of that design, though? A giant ring. I mean, like, if the person you're supposed to have a meeting with, you're at 12 o'clock and they're at 6 o'clock. I mean, is there a shuttle bus?
Yeah, clearly
these people have never been to an airport, because that does not work in any airport I've ever been
Walter
to.
Isaacson in the biography says in the initial design, Steve had one bathroom in the whole place because he wanted everybody to meet. And, you know, he wanted a lot of, cross-pollinization as people walked a mile over to the bathroom. This is straight out of Hidden Figures, isn't it? Somebody talked Steve out of that. I've talked to also some of the builders involved in this, and there have been problems with expansion, heat expansion, causing some of these plate glass windows to break, and they're very expensive, tens of thousands of dollars for each panel. And they don't make them one at a time. They have to make them in a batch. So one breaks, that means, you know, $500,000 batch of panels has to be made to replace that one. And they lost, I was told by this builder, quite a few. So it's ambitious, right? But it will be, I love this, 100% solar. They've got 17 megawatts of solar panels on the roof. The whole roof is covered with solar panels.
And because it's a ring shape, when there's no drainage, and when it fills up in the middle with water.
They'll have a pool.
They have a pool and an aquarium, which is fantastic.
And the dolphins will be so happy.
And the other advantage is that when North Korea starts the nuclear war with us, everyone who works at Apple will just get in the ring and it'll go.
I hope so. We're going to Mars, kids. Apple putting a lot of energy into some new Seattle offices as well, and this is kind of interesting. These are the offices focused on AI and machine learning, and they've got ties to the University of Washington there, where there's a very good program, and they've endowed $1 million professorship that was made possible by Apple's acquisition of Seattle-based machine learning startup Turi. It'll give the University of Washington Computer Science and Engineering Department a chance to attract more top talent. That's what you do, right? If you're going to build a team, you get the university, the nearest university, to create a program so you can draw people in, the best and the brightest. That's talk about long-term thinking. I mean, it was long-term thinking to build this building, but that's how long-term their thinking is. We're gonna grow our own.
You think they're doing that to poach from Amazon?
That's interesting. I don't know. Or
why else would you go to UW?
Yeah, that's interesting. Amazon or maybe Microsoft?
Maybe.
I mean, but the thrust of this is AI, right?
Yeah, not AR, which of course, AR is where Microsoft has a strong lead with its HoloLens.
Yeah, Apple is, I mean, if I were them, I would be sweating AI. That's probably what's really behind this. I mean, they missed the Amazon Echo boat. Got nothing like that. Their Siri is falling farther and farther behind. It's not extensible like the Amazon Echo is. You know, they abandoned their self-driving car thing. I mean, Apple should have been on top of AI.
They have so much cash that you'd think that they could just throw money at these kinds of problems. But I think, you know, it's hard to get the brains. And if you're, you know, you're a top AI researcher, where are you going to go? You're going to go to Apple or you're going to go to Google? Or you're going to go to Amazon?
Google,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Apple kind of crapped on machine learning with the rollout of Apple Music. They made a number of statements.
That was Jimmy Iovine.
True, but there was this push to where they saw Google going,
even
and
before,
where they saw the ability to do people or human curation.
Right. Even before they bought Beats, one of the things about Beat Music, Iovine made a big deal about it, is it's human curated. It's human curated. Mm-hmm. So I think that was Iovine speaking, basically, once Apple acquired them, saying, we're going to do human curation. And I think actually that works. I mean, look at compare Apple Music's choices to, say, Pandora, which is all machine-based.
And I don't think Apple's missed the boat on the connected home, you know, that device in the kitchen that can tell you when your eggs are done, or the forecast for tomorrow. I think there's a long way to go. And I think, you know, Apple does what Apple does, which is sit back and watch these companies try that. I mean, I think there's a space for something with a screen in that environment.
Yeah.
You know, how many times do you wish that your Echo had some side of, you know, sort of a screen on it that you could interact with it in a deeper way? Or the Google Home, for that matter. Instead of having to go back to square one, there's a way to work with it. And yeah, Siri has been woefully behind in certain ways, and the speakers that are on our Apple, you know, devices don't kick on unless I have it right up to my face to be able to get answers to it. But I think there's still a lot of room for growth there. And I don't think Apple's that far behind. If they put their strength behind that bat, they could hit a home run pretty quickly.
Go ahead. Yeah, I think the genius of the Echo and the Google Home is no screen, is that it is right. It's ambient. It's over there. It's your whole house listening. That the home kitchen appliance thing has been tried and died thousands of times. You know, the 3Com Audrey.
Remember that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was a kitchen tablet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants that. If we want that, we have a laptop or an iPad. No, this is the idea that wherever you are, hey, make it 2 degrees warmer in here. I mean, that's magic, not going over and tapping something.
You could make the case.
No, and I don't mean tapping it, but being able to see results in a way. I mean, I'm sure that this is on the R&D floor at Cupertino of course, yeah. Right? So, you know, how is that interaction? How are those experiences playing out? Do you want to – you have your hands covered in something. I was cooking something the other day, and I wanted that recipe that I had saved in Epicurious a while ago, right? I don't want to have to tap for it, but wouldn't it be great if that device was able to bring up that recipe right before me, right there on that screen, but could also be playing music and have a countdown timer? And there is a need for those types of things. And I think Apple probably is testing it. I'm sure Amazon's probably testing it as well. We don't know until we get our hands on it, right? Or we don't touch it at all.
You could actually do that on your Mac laptop now. You can say, call up the Epicurious document called Marinated Flank Steak that I had open last week.
And really? Open and I didn't know that.
It. Yep.
Oh, that's neat.
Got to read Mac OS Sierra, the missing manual.
Read that. No, I think it's not that Apple's missed the boat, but the boat is at the dock. The engines are revved up. It's about to sail. And what we don't know is what Apple's got hidden away in its labs. They don't talk about this stuff, right? So it's
And I think their mistake is announcing things like HomeKit. It's here.
Yeah, boy.
It's like, no, actually, it's not.
You got nothing. But they're not alone in that. Google also. And everybody's announced home automation, and nothing has happened at all. Let's take a break. I want to talk to you guys about what you're up to in a second, and we can also talk about the big, they're calling it cloud bleed, the big security issue at Cloudflare. We had a Cloudflare and crypto guy on yesterday in the new Screensavers to talk about it. It's a fascinating case study, if nothing else. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Certainly, if you are in the market for a new home and you're watching this show, you're thinking to yourself, I don't really want to go into a loan office and gather a box of papers together. I'd like to do this all online. And guess what? Quicken Loans has your back. Quicken Loans, the best home lender in the country. And you don't have to take my word for it. They've won year after year the J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards. They are really great. Have decided to make a product just for us geeks, an entirely online mortgage process. They call it Rocket Mortgage because it's 21st century. It's fast. It will lift you up. And you know, it's nice to work with a lender that you trust. It's nice to have the transparency and the speed of the internet And you don't even have to waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. Rocket Mortgage, you can actually securely share all the financial info they need to get mortgage approval fast, in minutes. You can also play with it. You can adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time. You can tailor it to just exactly what you want and get turned around and get approved in minutes. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online. QuickenLoans.com/twit2. QuickenLoans.com/twit2 for Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Just go to QuickenLoans.com/twit2.
Can I produce you for a second?
Produce me, will you?
I have three things I'm very curious about. One, what you think is interesting at Mobile World Congress.
Oh, good.
Two, what you made of the FCC Ajit Pai stuff this week. He was on CNBC and had some comments. And three, this cloud bleed. What do you want to start with? You get to be
all
the boss.
All three are good.
Wait a minute. Is this show being hijacked?
Yeah. No, sorry.
We go way back.
We go way back. Starting in 1998 when she produced the screensavers and Call for Help. She was the person in my ear who was telling me what to say, what to do. So I listen to whatever.
I'd like to talk about my new book, my new show, and my pet.
We are going to talk about your new show. And actually, the first time ever I've seen PBS go to Kickstarter to raise money for a show. That's very interesting. But I guess we should talk about Mobile World Congress. It starts technically tomorrow, although all day today there were press conferences. We tried to cover the Samsung press conference this morning, but they started 25 minutes late, so I had to cut it off. And as it turned out, you missed nothing. They announced a Galaxy Tab 3, which is an exact copy of an iPad, 9.7 inches. The only difference is it's an OLED screen, and probably a very nice OLED screen. But it has a stylus. It has all the same things the iPad has. Then they announced an exact copy of Microsoft's Surface Pro 4, a tablet Windows 10 computer with a detachable keyboard. And then they announced a copy of Google's Daydream. They take the Gear VR virtual reality headset, and it's basically the same, but they've added something that Google added to the Daydream a lot of people liked, which is a little controller, a push button. So that was Samsung's announcements. They did not announce a new phone. They said they wouldn't. They're going to do that March 29th in New York City. And then the Note, of course, is in the fall. But the Galaxy S8, we expect them to announce that in March and April availability. LG did announce a new LG G6, which looks pretty nice. It's kind of interesting. It's a super tall 5.7 inch screen. They've decided that people want big screens, but they don't want a big phone. In fact, everybody's trying to solve this. Apple, I'm sure, with the next iPhone will try to solve this. Samsung has too, with the curved screen. This is going to be a weird aspect ratio, a 2x1 phone. So it's taller than you're used to, but the idea is you can hold it in your hand and still get lots of screen real estate. Dual cameras as before with the G5. Sad to say, they're removing the removable battery. This is the G5 was one of the last phones you could still get a second battery and put it in. There'll be two G6s. One, the smaller one will have a removable battery, but the high-end will not. And as a result, we'll have better battery life.
Nokia is back from the dead with a 33.
What do you think? You're going to buy a 3310?
I'm going to buy the orange colored one.
It's going to be for my kids' first phones.
I had that phone.
Yeah, who didn't? It was the candy bar phone, one of the best-selling phones of all time. They sold, I read the number, it was like 75 million, some huge number of these, because they're cheap. This will be $50. It is not a smartphone. It has a browser, but I doubt you'd want to use it. It doesn't have a real keyboard. It has a regular phone keyboard.
What does it say the resolution of the camera is? I'm curious about that.
640 by 480.
No, it's better than that, I hope.
And will Snake make a comeback?
Snake is on it. They're claiming 22 hours talk time, 30 days standby time.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Look, Snake in color. Color Snake. You can get it in warm red and yellow, dark blue and gray. So pick your color. You know what? This may actually, of course, it's aimed at, you know, the developing world. It's not aimed at the U.S. market where the big flagship smartphones.
Perfect for parents to give their kids.
But
this is totally the phone my kids are getting. I mean, it makes perfect sense. No texting.
It's just a phone.
Laborious texting.
Well, you can text, but yeah, you'd have to learn how to. It does support 2G, But since most of the carriers are dumping their 2G networks, I don't think that matters. awesome battery. 2-megapixel camera. You weren't far off, David.
Wow.
You weren't far off.
Two megapixels.
But it does have a headphone jack. It does have a head. Mm-hmm. You know who may have given this an inadvertent boost? The Customs and Border Patrol. I think there are a lot of people traveling will bring a phone like this overseas so they can get it back in the country without fear. I'm going to Cuba for New Year's Eve this year. If I can get in.
Yeah, Customs and Border. The Border Patrol will look at this thing, or the TSA, they'll laugh at you.
Like, say, oh, we don't need your PIN, Laporte.
you don't need to turn on that phone.
We believe you. But I figure if I go to Cuba, I'm going to have a hard time getting back in the country, right? This is going to be, I certainly will be challenged. What were you doing in Cuba?
And with good reason in your case.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Great, David. Then you just made it worse. I might as well just wear a turban and put this phone in it.
Oh, Leo.
Oh, I would. That would be provocative. But so this was one of the announcements. Not only is the 3310 back, but Nokia is back. They're back making phones. The deal with Microsoft was they couldn't make phones until this year. But now they can. Not that this is going to compete with a Windows phone.
But what about the BlackBerry Key 1? Do you see that?
Yeah. So now BlackBerry's back to its physical keyboard, traditional. This is not inexpensive. It's $549, which...
Yikes.
Yeah. A number of tech blogs said, well, that's it. It's over. it does look like a BlackBerry, right? Because it's Android, but it has the traditional... keyboard at the bottom, not a slider.
Hey, like, did you hear Sony has a new VCR?
Hey, kids. Polaroid's back. Actually, Polaroid really is back. People really love those instant cameras.
It's the one that was actually the Fuji that was really good, the right. Instax. Did you get the Polaroid or the Instax?
No, button? I didn't get any of them.
Polaroid.
Oh, you got one? Oh.
Yeah, I got it.
See,
the
Instax is a little bit easier for them to use because my littles have that too. So I'd be curious. You got to do a comparison with your guy.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
I feel so left out.
The paper is the ridiculous. I mean, 10, you get a little, you know.
A buck a shot?
Buck a shot.
Buck a shot.
Buck a shot.
Yeah, but each one is a sticker, right? The Instax ones.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, that's worth it then.
Yeah, peel off the back of the zinc paper or whatever, and it's a sticker. You can get them with a sticker or non-sticker. I just ordered a package of like 50 on Amazon because we're going on a trip this week to spring training. So I want to get a box for the kids to bring to the beach, you know, for their cameras.
Right. Oh, wow.
Natalie's pilgrimage.
No. This is Phillies territory.
Phillies.
And we go to Clearwater.
You're going to Clearwater.
Excise.
Oh, boy.
No more Scottsdale. Wow. Uh-oh.
I don't know. Your in-laws aren't going to like that, buddy.
Cheese steaks.
They have cheese steaks in Clearwater?
They do at the Bright House Field there. They have a couple of the local vendors from Philadelphia there. Yeah, they've got some good stuff.
Spring training's awesome. I love spring training. What a cool thing. That's going to be fun. I brought the kids to spring training a few years. It was really fun. Scottsdale, of course, but it was really fun. What are their phone announcements? I think that's it.
Well, Nokia said they're starting to dive into like Fitbit type stuff, right? They bought Withings or Withings.
Withings, yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Withings stuff. I've used Withings for... Oh, they're going to finally get rid of that weird French name that nobody could pronounce?
Well, that's right. And what's funny is I asked the Withings PR rep if it's Withings, Withings, or
she said whatever you want.
No. She said it used to be... She said it's changed. It was originally Withings, and now it's correct to say Withings.
Oh, really?
I was also told Withings, and I will tell you, David, I got the smackdown from Nokia. It's not Nokia.
Every time we say it, we get people from Norway or Finland or whatever is calling and saying, you're not saying it right.
It's just south of Gnocchi. It's like
Nokia. Nokia.
Here's the one that'll really get you in trouble, though. Is it Nutella or Nutella?
It's Nutella. Ooh.
No?
Nutella.
It's Nutella?
Google it. You'll find the two factions warring, like, red states and blue states over that one.
This was my nightmare when I was covering viruses back in the late 90s, early 2000s, because people would make up these insane names.
Yeah.
And there was no way of knowing what the correct pronunciation was. But I think that's my favorite site online is how do you pronounce it? Have you ever done that? And it has the correct pronunciation for everything. It's the most ingenious
site. Today, speaking of internet wars, is exactly the second anniversary of The Dress.
Oh.
February 26, 2015. It's 2 years old.
You know you're old when an internet meme makes you feel old.
Well, we can resurrect it. What color is this dress? Is it?
That is so funny because on Tuesday, I was at USC for this for the shoot about the Star Wars dead character digital resurrection thing.
Yeah.
And they had that dress hanging up.
What?
In our interview. Yeah. They you couldn't buy it, right? It wasn't the one photographed. It was the same dress.
Right.
And I asked, why didn't you explain it to me since you're an optics guy? And he said, give me your phone. And he did the coolest thing, which you can do on your own when you see that dress. So your phone has a white balance sensor, right? It tries to make everything spread the spectrum.
Right.
So when I held the phone back like this, it was clearly blue and black. The actual answer is blue and black, by the way.
No, it's gold and white. What do you look? No, you look at that and you say blue and black?
Yes, I always have. But in person, it's blue and black. But if you bring your camera... cheating. if you bring your camera close enough that it loses the context of the background, the white balance thing says, oh, that blue, that must equal white. I need to brighten that all up. And it starts adjusting the contrast of the whites and darks. And
so you're saying in person it is blue and black when you look at it with your eyes.
The dress in real life is blue and black.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, we've learned something 2 years later. And it's with things. See, I always said why things because it's a Wi-Fi scale. It's a
makes sense.
But see, that's weird. But they're French. The opposite.
It's probably things. We things.
I think their CEO even told me years ago at CES. I asked him, and he said it's why things because Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi. That's why I've always said why things.
Yeah. Why things?
Clearly, that's before it changed, Clayton. Come on.
The other thing is
it Legoland? I was talking about it.
Is it Legoland or Legoland?
Lego. Lego?
Yeah, it turns out it depends on which one you call. I actually called them up and asked the receptionist.
Is it Moleskine? Moleskine?
Is it Berenstain Bears?
Moleskine.
That one I know.
Okay. Wow, this is going deep.
Yeah, so that was story one, Mobile World Congress.
Okay.
There's a lot more. Right. Oh, and one thing I didn't mention, which was a little weird, during the Samsung event, somebody came on stage and a protester, and the speaker was right at the beginning, said, okay, you've made your point, get off stage. And we didn't see it, but it was a Greenpeace protester with an inscrutable message. He had a yellow flag with the recycling logo on it, and inside it said Samsung Galaxy Note 7. And then hashtag Greenpeace. And I'm not sure what the point was, but that's in case you were wondering.
He wanted to, there's still like 20% of those, or like 17% of those phones are still out being used. He wanted people to recycle the rest of the remaining balance.
He was doing, Actually, didn't the factory that was recycling the batteries caught on fire?
Right.
Oh, God.
So it's just bad all around. Okay, so that was story one.
Right. Story two, I've been following the saga of your attempting to figure out your relationship with Ajit Pai, the new head of the FCC.
I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but he's not he's not helping.
You're kind of trying to figure it out, right? So this week he repealed privacy regulations for ISPs, and just make sure I get this right, so that they can't sell your data the way that search engines and social networks can sell your data for advertisers.
This was a relatively new rule created last fall under democratically controlled agency that would say that cable and wireless internet service providers had actually tougher privacy restrictions than Facebook, Google. So, for instance, the FCC rule said that marketing of web browsing history would require your permission, your opt-in. The FTC requires opt-in only for certain sensitive categories of information for Google and Facebook. So Pi's position, and this is, by the way, I believe what's really going on. Pi wants to eliminate FCC regulation of the internet entirely and put it under the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission.
On this issue, not on every issue.
I think on every issue. He doesn't believe the FCC should have a regulatory role when it comes to the internet.
Okay, so he was on CNBC, and I got this, watched it. And I recommend watching it because you get a measure of the man more so than all of these discussions, kind of trying to figure out what he's about. So to give you a little, the most important part says, my own view is that light touch regulation means we create broad regulatory frameworks to protect consumers, but blah, blah, blah. Competitive marketplace being the primary thing. We shouldn't micromanage how these companies operate in the absence of evidence of a market failure.
The problem is it is in a competitive marketplace, and that's partly thanks to the FCC, but it is not a competitive marketplace. 86% of Americans only have two choices, your cable company and your phone company for internet service, and a great many have one choice. That's not competitive.
Yeah, and why are we talking about the privacy thing when this is the guy who wants to get rid of net neurality? Why haven't we dedicated
it's all
2 hours
of a piece.
Talking about that?
It's all of a piece. And I really think that did he address this this FTC thing? Because, you know, some people say, well, of course, you don't want the FTC to regulate it because they're overburdened trying to regulate things like false ad claims. The FCC does not have an enforcement arm. The FTC does. But they're doing many other things.
In the CNBC article or in the CNBC interview, he didn't address that directly. But in some of the other articles about this, he says that if they're going to do it, they should do a broad regulatory framework that affects everyone's sense of this, as opposed to just picking and choosing.
Right.
But what does that framework look like? Who's going to, who's going to get to weigh in on this framework? What does that regulatory framework even look like? It's nice to be able to throw around loose language like that.
And why repeal before you have a replace?
Well, the bottom line is, I mean, the elephant in the room is that he was a Verizon lawyer, and he is.
But Tom Wheeler was also a cable
anti-consumer. I know, but Tom Wheeler got pushback from the public and changed his mind.
Right.
He came around.
Right. And in fact, ended up being a great defender of the public interest, I think.
Everything Pi has done or said is to the benefit of the bottom line of the Comcasts. And against the interests of the consumer.
Well, I mean,
period.
I think you could say that about the Trump administration in general.
True.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like it's a overarching. I mean, his comment here was, otherwise, we don't sit in judgment from Washington, D.C. My own view is that the internet should be run by technologists and engineers and business people, not by lawyers and bureaucrats here in the nation's capital. I mean,
who can
that's
disagree
just,
with that? I don't disagree with that.
Well, but then that's also just standard, that's kind of Republican policy.
Spoilerplate, yeah.
Well, I mean, would part of the framework be, hey, these cable companies get the opportunity then to look at this data. They get to understand it's their business after all, the pipes through which these users are using their data. I mean, using their information through their pipes. And we'd like to know, can we provide better service to those individuals?
Though, it's not merely know that, Clayton, it's sell it that people are concerned about.
Right.
I mean, and I think people often, we hear always people complaining about Google and Facebook, what they know about us. No one knows more about you than your ISP. Everything goes through your ISP, including your Google and Facebook stuff. Anything that's not encrypted anyway. I think the jury's still out. I think what I hope for is a kind of more traditional Republican administration that favors deregulation, as opposed to what I'm fearing we're getting, which is a Trump administration run chiefly by Steve Bannon's doctrine of eliminating government entirely.
I did not get that sense from him in that interview, and it was comforting to me along those lines. Yeah.
Because at CPAC, Bannon basically said, what we want to do is get rid of all of these administrative, we want to get rid of these cabinet jobs, get rid of these cabinet agencies. Just eliminate them entirely. That would be a little more scary to me than a more. I'd be very happy with a kind of more traditional outlook, Republican outlook on this at this point. We'll see. All I can say is we got to watch. And here's why, David. I'm reluctant to, because Tom Wheeler. We really did think he was going to be a jerk. John Oliver called him a dingo. Was it John Oliver or was it might have been on the Daily Show? Might have been John Stewart. Said, you know,
no, I think he, John was Oliver, did right? That he whole said, thing on
putting internet
net neutrality.
Net neutrality in the hands of Tom Wheeler would be like giving your baby to a dingo. It's and he turned and John Oliver apologized and Tom Wheeler said, I am not a dingo. and he turned out not to be. So I'm right. hopeful, right?
And his privacy rules were pretty stringent. Good. They go pretty far. Exactly.
And that's in fact what's being overturned right now. I think that though you're right, David, when you say it was the public response that changed his mind. Overwhelming public response in the case of net neutrality. So let's keep that pressure up and say and tell them what we want. Maybe we can influence it. All right, last story, Heartbleed. There's not much to say about this. It's a very technical topic. I guarantee you we'll be covering it in great depth on Tuesday with Steve Gibson. But in short, on a week ago Saturday, Tavis Ormandy at Google started noticing some very odd data in cached information from websites. Dug deeper, and he realized it was websites that were using services from Cloudflare, which is a CDN network often used by people to prevent DDoS attacks and for other purposes. And he didn't contact Cloudflare. He tweeted to Cloudflare. And Cloudflare reacted very quickly on Friday. It was an all-hands event a week ago Friday. And within 47 minutes, they discovered and fixed the bug, a bug that was a kind of weird interaction between two different pieces of software they use. And so they mitigated it. They didn't announce it publicly until Google wiped the cached information, which took them another week. And we learned about this just a few days ago. Cloudbleed affected a large number of sites. Although, if you're interested, I do encourage you to watch the interview we did yesterday on the new screensavers with the chief of encryption at Cloudflare, who I think did a good job of explaining it. And what he essentially said was our CTO, who is a good friend of the show, John Graham Cumming, I've known him for years, and myself, we are not changing our passwords. So that should give you some idea of how serious we consider this. It is not hair on fire time by any means. But we'll watch this with interest. It's pretty technical, so I'm not sure there's a whole lot to say, except I think Cloudflare responded appropriately and quickly and did what needed to be done. And I don't think they were to blame for this. This wasn't a case of them accidentally leaking information because they did things stupidly or badly. There was a bug, a really pretty stupid programming bug in a library they were using that interacted poorly with some of the other software they were using.
What seemed interesting to me about this is wondering if it isn't a service, or maybe not incumbent, but it would be a nice service from your password managers like LastPass to be the determinants of when you do need to change your passwords. Yeah. They don't do anything like that, do they?
They do. Both 1Password and LastPass have a security check up the Watchtower program on 1Pass and LastPass security check. But the problem is it's very difficult to know, A, what sites were affected, and B, what information was leaked. There's no way to know that. So this isn't like the Target breach where you can look at a database released of Target information or and say, oh, well, look at all these email addresses you've been pwned. This isn't going to show up in that way. So it's very difficult for them to do that, in other words. However,
LastPass services is passive, though. You have to go in and dig around and find that security check, as opposed to when you log on to your vault and then it would say, hey, just so you know, this vulnerability happened and therefore this password could be vulnerable.
It's impossible. Unfortunately, it's impossible to know. So, but the good news about any password vault is they generally have some sort of simple automated system where you can change passwords. In my opinion, you don't need to, especially if you're using two-factor authentication. If you have two-factor turned on important accounts, you really don't have anything to worry about. But I would suggest you listen to our interview with Nick Sullivan. He's the head of crypto at Cloudflare. We talked to him yesterday in the new screensavers. And tune in Tuesday, because Steve Gibson will have a deep dive, I'm sure, into this bug and what it means and what you could do to mitigate it. In my opinion, there's nothing to worry about at this point. But it's hard to know.
All right, good news in security.
Yeah, it's better news than Well, and if you, you know, for instance, there's a GitHub page that publishes a list of every company that uses Cloudflare. They're not all affected by this. In fact, it was a very tiny percentage of companies that use Cloudflare that were that are affected by this. So it's probably not a problem. But you never know, do you? All right, David Pogue, tell me why Nova has decided to go to Kickstarter to raise money for, is it a show? What is it exactly you're doing?
Yes, it is a show. It's a two-hour special about molecules and the elements called Beyond the Elements. And you're right, this is really kind of extraordinary that a public television show is seeking money from the public via a Kickstarter campaign. It's NovaKickstarter.com. And we're looking to get, yeah, there we go. We're looking to make $200,000 to start shooting this thing. And we're about halfway there. And, you know, it comes at a time when both public broadcasting is being defunded and science is being defunded. So to me, it's kind of like, guys, let's show the world that science matters, science education matters. Nova's an amazing show. It's been on the air for almost 45 years. The most watched science show in America.
It's a great show, and you're great on it. I watch it every single week. I love Nova.
Well, thank you. So So this is a sequel to Hunting the Elements that I hosted in 2012. It's now a staple of high school science curriculums all over the country, and we're hoping to take it one step farther. But I mean, just getting involved with this, as always with Kickstarter, it's not just about the money, right? There are these cool rewards, and one of them is, as we shoot this show, I will be sending you, you know, outtakes and bloopers and backstage videos right from my phone.
Nice.
In the various places we go, and there's some cool rewards too. You can have lunch with me.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to back that?
I feel like we've cheated because one of the levels of rewards is a video chat with you, David, and here I am kind of doing that. So.
But well, I'll look for your name in the list of backers, Leo.
Now, you got a ways to go, and I think that one of the things I remember you... Well, what didn't you initially ask for? $1 million? Was that right?
The original ask was $1 million. We're going to try to almost fund the thing through Kickstarter. And unfortunately, we launched the day after the inauguration when, you know, the country's hair was on fire and people were funding really important things, you know, Planned Parenthood and the ACLU. And it was kind of like we ranked too low on the who cares meter, I think, at the time. So we closed that and we've relaunched with a much lower target.
And you're almost there. You're halfway there anyway. 12 days to go. 91,000 raised. 200,000 is the goal. There are 1,000 backers so far. This is definitely worthwhile. And this isn't really, in a sense, this isn't new for public broadcasting. It's always been supported by its viewers.
That's true. The stations are supported by the viewers,
right.
And then that money trickles back through a very complicated series of channels, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and PBS and WGBH, and eventually winds up at the individual shows. But this is a really remarkable experiment going directly from Nova to the public. In fact, one particular special, one documentary that we're trying to make to the public. So
I like it. I think it's a great idea. Yeah.
It'll be cool. I guarantee. Just kick in $10 and become part of the movement. You'll get a lot of fun stuff just out of that.
What did you say? Nova.kickstarter.com? Is that the?
Just NovaKickstarter.com.
NovaKickstarter.com. One word. Great, David. Good luck. And thanks for the great work you do. You're really great on Nova and CBS This Morning, of course, at Yahoo Finance. And it's always nice to have you on the show. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, kind sir. Yeah. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Becky Worley, what are you up to? You're doing GMA every day, it seems like.
Yeah, well, that's my gig. I give my plug to David. Go give a buck to his Kickstarter. It seems important to me that we have to keep telling stories about science. So
yes,
watch me on Good Morning America, but go give some money to David. And also, I don't know why I'm plugging everyone else, but Clayton, I have to tell you, I've been loving your real estate investing podcast.
Well, you're very, very sweet. Thank you so much. Yeah, and I will plug because my wife and I, Natalie, do that show together. We talk about real estate and building net worth and accelerating your financial freedom, how to pay off your house in a few years using our HELOC strategy. And so we tell you, you know, how how we do it with rental real estate. We try to buy a property once a month as our goal this year. And we tell you how we do it, all the ways you can save on taxes, depreciation, all of the – and the more millionaires have been built in this country around owning real estate than any other form of investing. And so we walk you through our strategy on how we do it with single family properties. And so – yeah, the Investing in Real Estate podcast, we do it 3 times a week, if you can believe that.
You're up to 122 episodes, yeah.
Yeah, wow. And Inc. Magazine this week just named us one of the top business podcasts. Nice. So thank you to Inc. Magazine for that.
Nice. Congratulations.
So yeah, and Leo, I would also like to add that this is the first podcast my new puppy has made it through without barking.
Wow.
This is Akamai.
Oh, nicely named. Akamai.
Akamai is bigger than you are.
Does Akamai mean something in Hawaiian? Or I mean,
it means smart.
Oh, I knew it was the Akamai Content Delivery Network.
Yeah.
So that's a Hawaiian word meaning smart.
Yeah. So there you go. So this is my plugs are all
smart
given.
And tired, apparently.
Oh, and tired.
Akamai loves these tech podcasts.
Not to mention your daughter being very quiet, too. I know you're
That went well.
Yes.
See, I broke my screen policy for you guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, go all watch the Oscars because that's what's coming up next. Thanks so much to all three of you. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific. That's 6 p.m. Eastern time. We start a little early today. If you tuned in and said, what, they're starting already? Well, we wanted to get everybody out of here by Oscar time. But normally 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC. If you watch live, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. And, of course, we make on-demand audio and video available of every single show at twit.tv/ I don't know what it is. Just go to twit.tv. This is the one show that doesn't have its own dedicated URL because it would be twit.tv/twit. Does that work? Maybe it does. You can also subscribe. It's maybe a little bit easier to find Twit in a podcast application where everywhere you subscribe. Let me just see twit.tv/twit. Yeah, it does work. Well, look at that. I never knew that. The internet. What will they think of next? Thank you, everybody. Don't forget, last day of our survey is Tuesday. So if you haven't yet taken that two-minute questionnaire, it helps us understand you. We do it once a year. Helps us sell advertising, understand who's listening, make better shows for you. That's at twit.tv/survey, and we appreciate it if you take that survey. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
This is amazing.
Yay. Yay.